estar escuchando sí, sí, sí.
Next to him, I've got Mr. Ricardo Hansby, who's responsible for infrastructure and economic development, the DDG. Then, jumping him, I don't see, is Mr. Fossey there? But Mr. Temba Fossey is also here. He's responsible for policy, research, and knowledge management. And then we have, coming in there, that's Mr. Fossey, and then we have the acting head of the National Disaster Management Center, Setusha, sitting right at the back, and he's going up there. And then I want to submit apologies for the chief operating officer and the chief finance officer. They are unfortunately not here. But we have somebody who is acting on behalf of the CFO, Mr. Thomas van Staden, who's sitting around the corner there. And then there are a few other colleagues as well from the ministry and the department. I'm introducing them, Chair, because I'm doing the easy part, which is make the presentation. They will answer the questions and justify the flight to Cape Town. Now, I thought maybe if we had time, I would have done what I'm not going to do. I thought I must say, Chairperson, we have looked at a meeting we had with your committee on the 13th of April last year. When we presented our business plan for the year. There were quite a few issues raised there. Without getting into any one of them, I would like to believe that most of them, if not all of them, are actually covered in one way or another in the presentation. There were quite a few questions asked, and I've just been looking at them, and I really think that we have covered them in the presentation and in other kinds of discussions that we've had. So with your permission, I'm going to get straight into the presentation, and I'm not going to deal with too much of the background. Chairperson, you'll have to guide me about time. I thought maybe about 15 minutes, 20 minutes maximum, but you'll indicate. The outline of the presentation, it covers a range of things, but really the kind of substance comes towards the end. Items 9, 10, 11, and 12, that is really where the substance of the presentation comes in. So I think with your permission, I'm going to jump straight to slide number 9 and basically outline to the committee what the background is to this annual performance plan is that we are tabling here today. And the first important point to make is that our minister has signed a performance agreement with the president. That has subsequently been translated into a delivery agreement between the minister and MECs. And MECs have subsequently signed delivery agreements with mayors in their provinces. That is important background because that background has directly, not indirectly, it has very directly informed the revised strategic plan of the department. And also it has directly informed the business plan, the annual performance plan. This document that I refer to, it is the first time that we have done this, Chairperson. Even myself, when I read this, I need to remind myself what we've done here with this document. But the first time what we've done with this document, it is a one-year business plan. That is one part of it. The other part of this document, it is also a revised strategic plan. So that is also in this document. And the third part of this document will also provide the budget estimates of the department over the next 3 years. So this is a single document that does all of those things. Part of the reason why we've done this is because we do have a strategic plan 2009 to 2014. And based on this background that I've just explained to you, we thought that we can revise, update it, and do it in a single document that makes for easy coherence and reading. So that is really what we've attempted to do within this particular document, Chair. Now, this business plan and the revised strategic plan has got 9 strategic goals. Of the 9, 7 of them come directly out of local government turnaround strategy and come out of the performance agreement and the delivery agreement. So basically strategic goals numbers 1 to 7 cover exactly those areas of the turnaround strategy. 8 and 9, we have added, and we thought that we need to just have a specific one dealing with improving cooperative governance, and the last one dealing with the capacity and capability of the department, the need to strengthen that. So in summary, this is what both the business plan and the strategic plan deals with over the next 3 years and the year in question. This is the slide, honourable members, that I've just explained, where this annual performance plan does these three things that I've explained earlier. Now, in terms of the APP, there are six core programs, and I will go through each of them, and again, Chairperson, with your permission, I'm not going to deal with all of the detail. It's really going to take us long, but I won't maybe go at too high a level. But as I go through each of the programs, I'll pick up two or three of the specific outputs that to give members a sense of some of the very important matters that we're dealing with in each of these six programs. So, again, just before I get there, let me just make one or two comments about the kind of overall set of financial resources that we have. This year, 2011-12, we have a budget of 47 billion rand. Not million, billion rand. If you look at what the situation was in 2007-8, you can see it has increased quite significantly from 28 billion to 47. And in the next 3 years, this budget would have increased by another 10, almost 10 billion rand to 57.1 billion rand. And then, of course, you can see how it is spread. As has always been the case with this department, over 98% of this budget, if not 99% of this budget, is comprised of grants that go directly to our municipalities. And the single biggest grant is the local government equitable share. It is an unconditional grant, and that is, it falls under that program there called Governance and Intergovernmental Relations. That is why you see that particular line item being so large, 34.2 billion rand. The other big grant is the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, the MIG, and I think that is just on about 10 billion rand, and that is why you see infrastructure economic development, you see 12 billion there. So most of our budget really comes from, was made up of those grants that I've referred to. This slide simply gets into the line item description of our budget over the next 3 years. Now, honourable members, I will just go through each of the kind of programs. I'm starting with program one. Program one, dealing with administration, is really dealing with various administrative matters. It covers the ministry, it covers the office of the DG, the chief of operating office, officer, and a few other matters dealing with administration. And you can see there the strategic objectives of this program deal with those following matters that you see there. Let me just pick up on one or two of the kind of key output areas. The area of media management is very important to us. And that is why deliverables 1 and 2 speak to that very directly. We have made a commitment in this current year. We'd like to see at least the capacity of about 94 municipalities with regard to communication be significantly improved. I must say we have a partnership with GCIS in this regard, and we are working quite well in this, but we really think that we need to prioritize communication. So that is one of the key elements here. Another key element is number four. We have now established an inspectorate to assist us in fighting corruption in provincial and local government. And we have appointed the head of the inspectorate, and this person accounts directly to the office of the DG. We are in the process of appointing other senior managers in this particular inspectorate. We've had meetings with the SIU, and we are really seen this unit as being a very important unit in complementing the work of other law enforcement agencies in the fight of corruption. We are not going to get into the business of our prosecution. That is not our work. But certainly we will undertake some level of investigative work as part of this inspectorate. And then, of course, another important corporate governance area is the area of general financial management, and in particular dealing with matters of audit and risk management. This has been quite a challenge we've had in the last financial year. In fact, we're talking to the Auditor General around that. In the last financial year, we really, quite a few of our senior managers left us there. But it is an area where we've just recently appointed now a head of internal audit and risk management, so we are quite confident as we start this year we'll be able to implement the relevant policies that we have. Also, the area around international and donor cooperation falls directly within this program. In the Office of the Director General, and there are quite a few matters that we are going to pursue going forward in this year and beyond. So that, again, just gives members a sense of some of the key deliverables and areas of work within Program 1. This, again, gives an indication of the budget allocation. For the year that we're in, we have a budget of 212 million rand. One of the particular areas of work here, if you look at line number 3 there, Office of the Chief Operating Officer, and you see a budget there of 42 million rand. Why that is so large is because we have budgeted as part of the work of the CEO to oversee and support the establishment of provincial offices of our department across the country. So that is why that budget is so large, because the establishment of these provincial offices and the staff that would be in those offices is located within the Office of the Chief Operating Officer. Coming to program number 2, this one really is about providing cross-cutting policy support, research and advice to the department, putting in place key knowledge management tools and instruments. And again, that slide gives you a snapshot, should give members a snapshot of some of the key areas of work that this particular program and branch is driving under Mr. Forsey. This is some of the detail. So we've made it as part of Mr. Forsey's, this program's work program to support the Deputy Minister in the review of legislation affecting service delivery. Members will recall this is actually a presidential project. The President had a meeting with Premier Zilla and our Minister, and in that meeting they decided to embark on a review of all legislation affecting service delivery. And we are making quite good progress on that. Some challenges, but progress. We're also trying to come up with a good knowledge management strategy for the department, but going beyond the department, how we can begin to share seamlessly, interactively, information across provinces and municipalities. And again, this is something that we haven't done before, so we are really getting into this area with a lot of excitement and enthusiasm. Point number 3 is very important. Cabinet has taken a decision to review the white paper on local government. And this work is quite advanced, and we intend to take this to Cabinet quite soon. In fact, we have a draft document already. And then, of course, there are a few other areas as well. The area of exercising oversight over provincial and local government is a very important one. We're working quite closely with the Presidency, the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation on this one. And also we want to do an assessment of the state of information communication technology in our municipality. So those are just some of the key areas of work there. This gives an indication of the budget, 46 million rand for this program for the current year. The next program 3, under Mr. Sigidi, dealing with governance and intergovernmental relations, it's really about two things primarily. One, it's about promoting coordination within and across government. This is conventional IGR. But secondly, there's also the element of public participation and governance more broadly speaking. You know, always very particular in trying to explain that our understanding of the term governance goes beyond that of government, and it's about how we interact with a range of parties outside of government. So that area of public participation falls within that. And again, this slide gives a snapshot of the important areas of work within this program. Some of the details, again, I'm not going to get into all of them. I'll pick up a couple of examples. One of the areas we thought it's quite important going forward is to promote the establishment of municipal public accounts committees in all municipalities. We already know that right now, I think about just over 100 municipalities already in the country have these MPACs, about 103, I think. But clearly we are wanting to push that much, much more, and we want to provide concrete support. There's also the area of ensuring that all the municipalities have internal audit committees and also just audit committees. There's a difference between the two. The one is external and the other one is internal. It's a very important corporate governance matter that will hopefully assist in sorting out basic administration and assisting in the oversight of our municipalities when it comes to matters of basic financial and basic financial management and basic administration in our municipalities. Area number four is also very, very important. Cabinet also took a decision that we need to finalize a green paper on cooperative governance. This work is also very advanced. We have a document on the table already. We intend to take it to Cabinet literally within the next couple of weeks, 2 months for the latest. But this particular green paper requires a lot of consultation. We have that consultation, and I suspect once it goes through Cabinet, we are going to be requested to consult much more. But we feel this document is in a sense, this green paper is overdue because we have sufficient experience, lessons that we've lived since 1994, 1996, and this policy paper will begin to be much more explicit around norms and standards in this area of intergovernmental relations and cooperative governance. Then, of course, this program also has some role to play in managing the municipal infrastructure grant that I spoke about. That's quite important. This program will also assist us in our fight against corruption. And this program also, number eight there, will be responsible, and I think the Deputy Minister covered this, will also be responsible in finalizing and processing this piece of legislation on sections 100 and 139 and 154. That is really summary there. It doesn't only deal with section 139. So that is a priority that we have. And then, of course, we also want to ensure that we support municipalities on implementing the Property Rates Act. And again, we've explained with your support, we have amended that particular act. And then, of course, we also continue to administer the Local Government Act or SHARE. Also very important in this program is our work on ward committees. After the elections on the 18th, I think we'll have, 4,277 ward committees. This is an increase of, I think, the 3,985 that we had. We are of the view that we need to refine, improve, amend our ward committee system nationally. So we are actually intending to put some new policy framework on the table and even necessary legislation to support us on that. And then, of course, number 12, we want to work quite closely with provinces to ensure that they support our municipalities with regard to provincial-specific frameworks on community participation. Very important, we're also driving something called the Community Development Worker Program. And again, the colleagues can explain that, but we think that we need to also give greater coherence to the work of government when it comes to community development workers. And the one or two things that we want to do, again, to learn from our lessons, we're working quite closely with the Department of Public Service and Administration on this. From a financial perspective, this program has got the largest budget, and I think I explained that earlier because of the equitable share, so it's 34 billion rand. but also by way of oversight, this program also has responsibility for basically supporting and exercising a monitoring role when it comes to SALGA, MDB, South African Cities Network. The last organization, the United Cities and Local Government of Africa, when we prepared this plan last year, because we started on this work last year already, at that point in time, we still had this as a budget line item. But if you look carefully there, you can see that there's a line through the allocations for this year and going forward. And again, we can get into the discussion later, but this particular institution, it was hosted by South Africa up to last year, and currently there's a situation that has arisen where that is no longer the case. And again, I'm saying, honourable members, we can get into a quick explanation of that later, and I'm sure SALGA can also assist us in explaining that. So we have not set aside, I was saying all of that to make the point that we have not set aside further funding for that particular institution, supporting local government on the continent for the next 3 years, because we are not the host country. That's the simple explanation, but we continue to support that particular organization. Coming to Program 4, National Disaster Management Center, apologies for the spelling on top there. Again, there are one, two, three important things that we want to do. And we can see what those things are there. But getting to the details quickly, one of the most important things we want to do is to really ensure that we have disaster management plans in place across all provinces and across all metros and across all districts, at least. So again, you know, we have set ourselves a target there to work with at least 15 particular stakeholders to ensure that they have plans. But this is not to say that we have a general oversight responsibility around this, covering everyone. Closely linked to the disaster management plans would be the establishment of functional disaster management centers. And again, it is a requirement in terms of the legislation that this committee has processed in the past, that all provinces, all districts and metros need to have these disaster management centers that are functional, and you can see the target that we've set ourselves. We also want to develop what we call an indicative risk and vulnerability model on flood risk in particular, and I think the lessons of the last couple of months have really pointed to the urgency of developing such a particular model and going beyond that model to a support program. These are some of the key components in that National Disaster Management Center. We have a component dealing with legislation and policy, and there's a new chief director we've appointed there. Then there's another component dealing with planning, coordination, and support, and Ms. Setusha sitting at the back, she's actually the chief director for that particular component, but we've asked her to act as the head of the center while we are trying to finalize the appointment of the head. And then the third chief director deals with what we call intelligence and information and systems management. We have not appointed yet a chief director for that. I think, again, the important point to make on this slide is that for the first time, we have now, Treasury has set aside a grant for disaster management that we will be managing. And again, we can explain the details there, but that explains why under disaster relief transfers, you see the that particular large amount, 775 million. But I think that amount includes monies that were allocated for previous disasters in the current financial year. So you can see it tapers off. But as I'm saying, the most important point here is that we have now been entrusted with managing a particular grant to assist us in dealing with disasters. The second last program is a very important program, and in some senses it deals with the thrust and the core of our work as a department, and that is really about supporting provincial and local government. And as you can see there, the purpose in black there is really about providing support, but at the same time exercising oversight with regard to these two spheres of government. There are a range of things that we are doing here, and again, this slide gives a snapshot of some of the important areas that we'll be focusing on. Getting to some of the details, it is this particular program, and let me also say that this program is, as I said in my introduction, we haven't appointed a Deputy Director General, but hopefully we would like to believe in the next 2 months we should have finalized this appointment. Coming to, again, the deliverables, it is this particular branch that is responsible that will be responsible for implementing the Municipal Systems Amendment Bill and that particular act in general. And if I just jump to number three, it is also this particular branch that will need to implement, both finalize and implement what we call this segmentation model. For our municipalities. Basically what we are saying, and we've made the same point in the turnaround strategy, the point that says we can't continue to treat all municipalities in the same manner, and we need to find a differentiated way of working with them, and I'm saying it is this branch that will basically give effect to that. And you can see there's a particular target that we've set ourselves just to at least work with municipalities when it comes to planning that we've identified. On the issue of housing accreditation, this is not our core function. It is something that is done by the Department of Human Settlement, but we will also be providing and see what support we can provide, complementary support we can provide to those municipalities that have recently been accredited and also future municipalities that may be accredited. Again, in the area of planning, there are at least 80 municipalities, we are loosely terming them smaller municipalities, that will require dedicated support when it comes to preparing their IDPs. And you will recall in the local government turnaround strategy, we have said that we need to embark on a process of simplifying the IDPs for those municipalities, but at the same time working within the parameters of the law. So no one is saying that we're asking them not to do what the law requires. But at the same time, we're saying that the IDP of a small municipality like Kokama cannot be the same as the IDP of Tshwane or of Nelson Mandela. So that is basically the approach there. I think that also to some extent covers number six. We will also, at number seven, year work very closely with at least 50 municipalities in implementing a revised revenue enhancement strategy. This work will be jointly undertaken by this program and the one dealing with governance and intergovernmental relations. Already we've done some work here. We know what the numbers are. We know what monies are owed to municipalities. We know how much provinces our municipalities and national departments, and this is something really we want to implement this program we'd like to implement it quite aggressively going forward. That is also linked to number eight. Want to reduce the debt owed to municipalities quite significantly. You can see the target. And then also focusing in the areas of operational expenditure, capital expenditure. Again, you know, we've had challenges of municipalities not really being able to meet their targets in this regard, either overspending or underspending. And of course, it is no surprise that in quite a few municipalities we have seen trends of underspending when it comes to capital budgets, and we've seen trends of overspending when it comes to operational expenditure. And those are key priorities that we want to fill. Number 11 is very important, dealing with vacant posts in all our municipalities. Right now, we've not been tracking overall vacancy rates in our municipalities. What we have been tracking is vacancy rates at the level of municipal managers, and at the level of chief finance officers, and at the level of what we call section 56 or 57 managers. But clearly going forward, we will need to monitor more closely the overall vacancy rates and the extent to which municipalities are filling those posts. Quite a few other priorities. We want to continue to improve performance management systems and work with provinces so that they can roll out capacity building frameworks to our municipalities. Okay, and these other two areas deal with our support to the Department of Human Settlement. The budget for this program is 248 million rand. Right, coming to the last program, infrastructure and economic development. Again, one of the core priorities here is to ensure the rollout of basic services to our communities on the ground. There are one or two innovative programs, flagship programs, one of them being this Operation Clean Cities and Towns program, also closely associated to this program is the work on the special purpose vehicle. I did not introduce the colleague that we've asked to focus exclusively on this. He's with us here, Mr. Ongama Mashlawe. You can maybe just put your hand up there. But that is a special program which will complement the work of this particular program. Now, there's quite a lot of detail here, and I'm not going to get into the details. So if you look at number one, for example, you know, one of the things we've said to ourselves that there seems to be a backlog around electrification infrastructure. So therefore, one of the very specific targets that we've put ourselves for ourselves is to work closely with the Department of Energy and to see how we can support the process of building substations in at least 20 municipalities. So this is a concrete example of how we see ourselves playing a support role. One of the points I should have made right at the outset of the presentation, and we always end up in this debate with wherever we report in our work, is that for a lot of the things that we put in our business plans, we are not always the primary provider or, if you like, the implementer of some of the things that we're talking about here. Our department is primarily one that deals with coordination, facilitation, and enabling other departments to do what they need to do. So I'm saying that because it is very applicable to what I've just said and to many of the other points that we are making here. So you can see some of the other examples around electricity, rolling out megavolt lines there, extending access to households, interest for electricity. The same kind of targets we have set ourselves for rolling out basic water. And for this year, we'd like to see at least 96% of our households have access to basic water, again emphasizing basic water. We have also set targets with regard to basic sanitation, the same for refuse removal and waste management. And then, of course, I've already mentioned the fact that we have this program on clean cities and towns, and we'd like to focus on at least 8 such towns within the current financial year. The community work program is also a very important program that we're implementing this year. And Chairperson, if we've not had a separate presentation on this, I think we would be quite keen to come and make a very specific presentation on this work. We see this as being an important contributor to our job creation targets, but also dealing with the basic livelihoods of our people in some of the most impoverished wards and municipalities in our country. We also have a program that we are driving on the side where we're trying to get business and corporates to work closely with some municipalities. We had quite a exciting workshop last year where we quite virtually all the major corporates attended this. And we haven't made much progress since then, but as I'm sitting here, we have quite a few pledges of support, monetary and otherwise, and we see this as part of the kind of partnership model that was referred to in the other department, where we also wanting to facilitate a range of partnerships that would support the implementation of the local government turnaround strategy. Again, as part of the work of this program, we've set ourselves specific targets for job creation opportunities linked to cooperatives. So, Chairperson, you're definitely correct to make the point earlier that there is some link, at least, with the work of this department and that of cooperatives. And again, we can explain some of the things we're doing there. We actually had a successful conference in Midrand, was it on Monday? On cooperatives, and again, we can just give an indication of what has happened there, but it's part of us, you know, doing everything that we can to ensure that our communities are engaged in some form of productive activities. I've already commented on the issue, that's ward-based cooperatives, so it's closely linked. And then also as part of this partnership model, in working with stakeholders on the ground, local businesses, organized formations of business, we thought we need to experiment in going forward in establishing what we call economic development advisory councils across the country. But we really see these as fora where municipalities, businesses, civil society formations can come together and deal with matters that they don't ordinarily would have the occasion to deal with on a regular basis. There have been quite so many examples around the country where we've had massive fallouts between organized business and a municipality. And we think fora such as this will allow for that dialogue, but hopefully it can also lead to one or two projects that will be to the benefit of everyone. So item number 14 is closely linked to that. We've spoken about cooperatives. We also want to do other few innovative things around land use management forums. And already I've referred to working with the business. We thought maybe let's experiment with something called the Private Public Procurement Forum, Managers Forum. And again, this is about basic sharing of information. And about communication at the local level, and we really think that this is all about creating that enabling environment for different parties to work together at the local level. Chairperson, again, I won't get into details. I've said earlier that we're going to continue to work very closely with the Department of Human Settlements. So one of the things, number 19, that we're going to work closely with them is to roll out the implementation of SDF, stands for Spatial Development Frameworks, Guidelines. We think there's still much work that needs to be done in terms of creating communities where we're addressing the legacies of the past when it comes to land use patterns, and so these guidelines are an attempt to kind of deal with that. The budget, 12 billion rand. I've already indicated, if you look at the last line there above what is written in red on the screen, special purpose vehicle. Again, it is the first time this year that Treasury has allocated to our department a total of at least 192 million rand. This money basically has been redirected from the DBSA, the Development Bank of Southern Africa. You know, they have had a program called Siyenza Manje, and the infrastructure component of that program, this is important, the infrastructure component has been redirected to our department. The financial management component, I think they will continue to manage with Treasury, but we have basically agreed with Treasury and the DBSA, we've been consulting them to ensure that we roll out this program. And again, we can get into the details of the key aspects of that program. I've already commented on the community work program. You can see we have a budget there of about 647 million rand. I've explained that the primary purpose of this program is about the creation of job opportunities. And we're very deliberate in talking about job opportunities because we know that this is part of the expanded public works program. But we think that this is an important contribution to creating sustainable livelihoods in our poorest communities. Chairperson, that basically concludes the presentation. We thought we would just again give the members a high level sense of the structure of the organization. It is one ministry, the Ministry of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, COCTA. Within that, there are two departments, the Department of Traditional Affairs and then the Department of Cooperative Governance. We have the COO who is not here, and then we have those five branches. And in addition to that, we will also have the special purpose vehicle. I can also just indicate, if Cabinet approves this, then the special purpose vehicle will be established as what we call, quote-unquote, a government component. Simply what that means, it means it will be almost a standalone entity within the ministry, and that entity will report directly to the ministry. So, Chairperson, that is a flyover of the presentation. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Members, there's the presentation of the Department of Cooperative Governance. Any questions, comments that you want to make? Good night. Okay, go ahead, man. Okay, if you invite me, I was resisting saying so. You will rue the day you ask me that question. No, I was going to say that I should have said it with the first presentation, that tell us what you think is sounds like works well. Just what strikes you personally in the presentation you have just listened to. Just say it. What works well, and then go to whatever it is you wanted to raise. I'm suggesting it as an approach.
Not now, because I've already structured my...
See, why you shouldn't have asked the question you asked. I was suspending it because I knew what the result is going to be. James is already smiling. What the hell is the chairperson up to? It's just that it is often useful to start with what works and then go to what is not working, generally speaking.
But General Chairperson, I think we must stick to you, because I think it's the third or second mission we channel, meeting we channel us to do that, but next time then we'll stick on that.
Yeah, from
you. We were recently in Northern Cape and...
Yeah, I tried my level best to steer you in that direction and you resisted. Yeah, okay, now thanks, but that's there. I'll talk about it more in detail next time, but proceed, please, yeah.
Thanks, Chairperson. This time around, I think I'll be having one question. Maybe emanating from the oversight role we did in Northern Cape on Program 4 of the Department National Disaster Management Plan. I would appreciate, and I'm glad that there was an increment in the budget allocation of that Program 5, which is 775 million. But coming from Northern Cape, in a province whereby it's been struck by these national disasters, monitoring there, checking implementation of maybe assisting the people who have been affected by those disasters. The progress is very slow. Province is saying that they're still waiting for national department and local governments and district offices trying their best to assist them, but they're saying from the national government the progress of assisting them is very slow. I just want to check the improvement thereof in the next maybe disaster that you may experience. Thanks.
Thank you very much. You've just done it. That's great. Thank you very much. In that order, I just come this way. May Muresi Khalid Iswai, James, Marty, Wendy, Machoba.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. One should really appreciate the department on what they have done with the Katlo municipality. I happened to went there with the ad hoc committee, and really we were not pleased. But last time when we went recently, there was a lot of improvement, whereby the department had seconded officials to really go and reinforce the to the municipality. When we were there on the disaster, we saw that the people who were hit hard by the disaster, they were mostly the informal settlements who have just placed themselves on the edge of is it the dam or whatever. What do I want to know on the disaster? What are we doing? Because mostly when we look at our disaster victims, are those people from informal settlements? How do we really see to it that we shouldn't be having those things recurring, whereby you find that people just place themselves on the place where they are not supposed to, and it has been becoming a common practice. On your introduction, Lizzie, as usual, when we sit here as women, some of us from the party which advocate for the 50% of women representatives, we always see that even a very simple thing of delegates coming to parliament, is always, I know that it will be said that it's because the top management are male. And I would want to know, how are you addressing that? I was a little bit going to be impressed, but it goes down again when it says 18. All of the people, the male who were introduced, they are apparently on position, but the woman who's been introduced on the top management today is acting. Then I'm really having a problem that when in a department there is a disaster or there is a need, that somebody must stand for whoever who resigned. It is a woman, but when we are appointing, all of a sudden, women don't have qualification. And if that is the case, the women don't make it in the interviews, what is the department doing about it? Because it is not of the women's making that we were sometimes left in the kitchen for a very long time. I really want that to be, because it is not a good thing. Sin. To be seeing your delegation as it is. Thank you, Chair.
Led by the Deputy Minister. Jen? I'll start with the easy one before I say what I'm very interested in and supportive of. First of all, some definitions. Page 20, Program 6, some very ambitious looking deliverables there, supporting the upgrading of electricity reticulation to enable 87% of households to access electricity supply. You use the word support and facilitate. Can you expand a little bit on that, what that all means? The following page, yes, ward-based cooperatives. Could you give us some more information on what those are and how they work? The page after that, still Program 6, the private-public procurement managers forums. I'd like to know more about that. And then, jumping backwards again, because this is my longest series of questions, to Program 1, the Inspectorate of Corruption, which I think sounds very interesting and possibly very positive. So there you are, Mr. Chairman. when is this inspectorate operating from? What kind of skills are they going to have? Who's going to decide what they'll investigate? How will they interact with other enforcement agencies? And I suppose the last question is something along the lines of, it probably arises out of the previous one, and that is will it have credibility if the department doesn't seem to be investigating itself?
Thank you, Chair. In addition to my colleagues' questions, in slides 25 and 26, we are referring to percentages that identify municipalities and so on. I'd like to know the criteria used, how these percentages were attained, and which are these municipalities in question. Thank you.
Thank you. Wendy?
Thank you, Chair. Mine also went around percentages, but slightly different. How is that? Those percentages. What is the criteria that's going to be used to identify those percentages? And then, Chairperson, the other one, I think it's on Program 5, capacity building. Again, out of oversight visits that we have been doing, the smaller municipalities do not have technical skills. That's a given, and it's creating problems. We saw what happened in Northern Cape, where the province took in people. and you can see the marked improvement. So around this capacity building, is there anything specifically to address the issue of technical skills in smaller municipalities? That for me is important. Development agencies versus advisory councils, development agencies we've got in district municipalities. What is the difference between the development, current development agencies and the advisory councils? Because it looks to me as if it's almost the same type of thing. Chairperson, the last one is going to be out of the Auditor General's presentation made to us last week. Northwest, the province I come from, most of the municipalities there have not submitted their financial statements, financial reports, have not reported as was expected to. What kind of, and I see impacts are being put in place and all kinds of things, but in this very province, Chairperson, the department has seconded people to many of those municipalities. I would like to see, Chairperson, the municipalities that have staff seconded by the department to those municipalities versus reports not being submitted. In terms of where we've had problems in the municipalities, but the department seconded, and whether there has been an improvement with the secondments made or not. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thanks, Jim. Mine is that what I am going to emphasize on slide 15 about disaster response and management. It seems as if the department, the national department, is taking too long to respond. Because if you go out to the local government, they've got none. There's no money towards them. But there's a disaster now. It seems as if to us, the national department is taking too long to respond. The second one is on this intergovernmental relation. When it comes to sanitation, but we want to find out now the district knows better the local municipality about the sanitation. Whereas they are supposed to sign these letters, but they are not in popular. Only the district, because they approach the district, but the local municipality knows nothing about what's going on. At the end, they must sign something which they are not aware of. If maybe we can try and fix it, that's all. It's just a comment.
Thanks for the opportunity for a second bite. Chair, I'll be failing in my duties not to mention in the region that I'm coming from, where I am mostly doing monitoring and oversight. Yes. Helps run the region. Last week we were having a local government summit whereby the seven municipalities in that region were together, including the district. Out of the seven, and I just want also to make mention of, out of the seven, we know that there were some other municipalities who were affected by this recent protest, local government protest. But in those presentations, there was a great improvement from like, example, Balfour, Standerton presentations. But I was slightly disturbed by the one Honorable Nelson was saying, if those municipalities whereby there is an intervention and assistance by the department, there is no improvement. We know as an ad hoc committee, we went to visit Kondo Municipality, my hometown municipality. There's still no improvement according to those presentations that they made in that local government summit. Hence, there is an intervention in that one. So I'll urge, maybe ask the department just to go close again while you visit national department offices in Pretoria. We made mention and raised some question on how, since our ad hoc visit, how is their follow-up meetings visiting those municipalities that we visited. So the response was saying there are people who are deployed from the national department who are assisting them.
I would like maybe the DG to just go in and ask for a report, how is the progress thereof since our visit, and comparing them with my last participation in their summit. There is still deterioration, hence there is no improvement, no funds, no what, but there is an intervention. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, thank you. Your questions and comments were very usefully based on your concrete experiences, concrete observations from your work. And that's very useful to do that always. I like the job creation focus in the infrastructure and economic development. That's an important part to emphasize that. But I believe that the entire area, each one of the programs, has a job creating possibility. Firstly, given the responsibility the department has, it's what it often refers to as its new mandate. To be effective, so you need people power there, including the observations by Honorable Mureti Des Khaledi Swai. That's a very crucial part of the job creation. In other words, for the department to carry out its functions, it must be appropriately and fully staffed. So the question we asked earlier on applies in every one of the sections and programs here, so that that's the one observation I wanted to make. I also want to talk about public participation. Don't you think, Deputy Minister, you will relate to this question I'm going to raise, that it is true when others the reason members, I'm saying the Deputy Minister will know, we both attended the launch of the Good Governance Learning Network, launch of their State of Local Government report. And one of the key observations they make, and it's not for the first time they make that, and others have made it before, that government is focused on the on ward committees. When the public participation is ward committees. Okay. Yet, we know that there are other forms of participation that take place in municipalities that involves councillors individually and collectively that are not necessarily ward committee based, but they are as valid as all other forms. So, do you think that bias is justified? In other words, not detracting from the important support work you are doing for ward committees. But what about other forms of participation? Let me go to an interesting one that you will all relate to. That a large constituency of these municipalities now live on cyberspace. Okay. Okay, now, please don't bash me for talking for you Bulgari. People who... Sorry? Yes. And so, the speed with which people would like to get responses is based on the ability of government departments and municipalities to respond swiftly. And one of those forms is if they can be able to interact using technology. So I'm just citing that as an example. So, and there are other... That's another way of soliciting and getting feedback. So you never talk about that, really. So I'm just asking that the question. Don't you think it is justified, SALGA itself, when it speaks, it doesn't surface what is already happening inside municipalities by way of public participation, other than ward committees. So it would be interesting to just get to hear what your views are around that. Let me quickly rush to the disaster management. Deputy Minister and DG, I'm really unhappy with this part of your performance. You see, if you remember when the Act, when the Disaster Management Act was promulgated, and the deadlines given for the implementation of disaster management centers, the way you speak about it there, it's like this thing just was just done 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Yet this is old stuff. We're supposed to be asking you, why is it that we do not have disaster management centers in each of the districts in the country as the law required? That you must, like I was asking earlier on from the DDG from Traditional Affairs, what problems has led to the fact that up to now, long after that legislation was put in place, we still don't have these centers operating and facilitating? The area we come from, which is part of Northwest, it was very clear that, Northern Cape, rather, Northern Cape, yes, that the center, people were saying, we're still waiting for them to come. It's like that they were based somewhere else, you know, literally elsewhere, because of the absence of an effective center in the province, at the provincial level. Okay, they claim the issue is resources, but what I'm really raising is that the way you speak about it in your staff does not reflect that perspective, that this is old stuff, it is long supposed to have been done. We are not provided with, in its presentation, reasons for this delay of implementation of the law. So that's the one point that I want to express. Don't you have any obligation to the United Cities, even if you are stopping funding it, that require to support it? Don't you have a joining fee or something like that? I'm just raising, even if you're no longer hosting it, don't you have to budget something that you provide there and so on? And yes, the DG, the last point, the second point that Honorable Ntlangetwa raises is linked to the earlier point about the disaster management. You see, in your introduction you said many of the questions we raised, you are sure are covered in the documentation. But you don't say so even as you present. Okay? And one of those is progress with implementation of the... we have interacted before, so this ad hoc committee is only one of the contains recommendations that we requested the department to act on. So presentation is just giving us, it deals with the three things that you are talking about, but you don't relate it to those things that may have financial implications in following them up and implementing them. So where do we locate them? So that, I mean, it would have been helpful to situate your plan to proceed with implementation of these various programs also against the concrete issues we raised from the ground that created protest on the ground and so on, so that we can relate to that interaction with yourselves. So we shouldn't hope, as you say, or search with a fine tooth, where could those things that the question be covered for? Oh, this one looks like it, but we can't quite place it. So we would like a better representation of those issues and their follow-up in your report. What we hear you say doesn't fully account for those issues that we have raised, including just a brief summary of in the following things that the at a committee report, this is the progress with its follow-up. This is how it is impacted upon by some of the programs that we've just referred you to and so on, so that we don't take for granted it's covered there and so on. So that's the one that I think, as a matter of managing how you report to us, that it should be evaluative. I want to return to that word again. That these following things that we are saying we are going to do are related to the issues the committee raised through the various reports, including the budget review recommendation report. Okay? That, this is what is happening about those things. The meetings that we suggested you interact, this is what is going to result from those things. So that's the one general point that I'm raising. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Third bite.
Before I just want to quickly, that our last meeting with CQ, we were busy with the Mutual Systems Act, down, we have finally passed it. I just want to check whether in their program, welcoming the new councillors that will be there, is there any program that they will make and maybe educate or finalize the incoming new councillors in connection with that bill? Thank you.
Colleague George is probably smiling with approval at your question, because, yeah. So, yeah, okay.
Thank you very much. From my side, I've marked three questions that I will deal with. I mean, the balance will be dealt with by my colleagues. I would like the colleague from Mr. Tushia to comment, Mr. Hansby, Mr. Sigidi, Mr. Mashlawe, then the colleague from HR, maybe if you can also just comment on the gender issue. Maybe let me just comment on that quickly. I think, Honourable Member and Committee, we take your comment. Let me just make two general comments. One, at the level of DDGs, we only have, for the record, we have one female DDG, the Chief Operating Officer, Dr. Sabeho. So there are two other vacant DDG posts, and we are trying our best to try and make sure that we bring women on board there. So that's the one comment. The second comment, where I like to think it is good news, but I want my colleague to see if he has the statistics with him. If you look at the senior management of the department, we have made very good progress in trying to come as close as possible to this principle that people call the 50-50 percent principle. I don't think it is quite 50-50 at the senior management level, but it is definitely over 40%. And here I'm talking about people director levels up. I'm not talking about junior people. So when my colleague responds, I will see if he's got those statistics there to comment on that one. And then Mr. Fossey, if there's anything that you'd like to add. The DM, just to say that the Deputy Minister will deal with some aspects of public participation, and the DM says he also wants to deal with UCLGA, and of course you can deal with anything else you'd like to deal with. Thanks. So can we start in that order, right at the bottom, Mr. Tushin?
They're both there. You get me, man. They're both
okay. Thanks, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members of Portfolio Committee. I will start with the first question on the 725 million rand. I just want to clarify that that amount is for the disaster relief grant, which responds to immediate humanitarian relief. So it's not for the post-recovery and rehabilitation. With regard to the current disasters, yes, there's a lot of impact that has happened. And I must acknowledge that the process is very slow of responding. currently, what we are doing is that we have been allocated 600 million for the post-recovery and rehabilitation, of which currently we are on that stage. This 600 million is within the National Treasury Budget Board, and how are we supposed to access that amount? We have appointed PSPs that are busy. My apologies, Chairperson. The professional service providers, that is PSPs, my apologies. In fact, we have three stages of doing the assessment. Immediately after disaster has struck, that's when we are conducting the assessment. That's what we call preliminary assessment. Then after that, we have the on-site to go and assess whether the damages that have been reported by the provinces is really what happened on the ground. Then the third phase is when we get the verification by the professional service providers, where they will give us, you know, a relatively accurate cost estimation. Because currently with the cost estimations that we got from the provinces, it's so high. So it doesn't really, we need to get that confirmation from this last process. So we have appointed four service providers that will be conducting the verification process in all the 8 affected provinces and 33 municipalities. We are expecting a preliminary report or a draft report on the 26th of May, where we will be then drafting or submitting an application for funding from National Treasury so that we can access this 600 million. So for us to access the 600 million is based on that report, the technical report that we're going to get from the professional service providers. What we did, we then drafted a proposed allocation for this 600 million to all the provinces. I just have a presentation here where we then proposed that allocation to different provinces. And secondly, last week we wrote letters to the premiers to indicate to the minister how are they going to spend that amount of the proposed allocation that we have allocated to all the provinces. During the inter-ministerial committee meetings, what happened is that they identified key 3 priority areas which is that have been affected by the disasters. That is schools, roads and bridges, and houses. So we have allocated 600 million to that, because when you look at the water issue and agriculture, water assets have allocated funding for the damages with regard to their infrastructure, and agriculture also has to follow suit. So the 600 million is going to respond to the post-recovery and rehabilitation. Secondly, what I really need to emphasize is that why the delay with regard to response. We've got a problem whereby sector departments are supposed to have disaster management units or capacity, but then currently we don't have, you know, that choice from the sector department, because they need to always be ready and assist, and whenever there's any disaster, they need to respond at the provincial level and also at the local level. So it's one of our recommendations to the inter-ministerial committee to say, sector department must make the plan that they ensure that they capacitate their themselves, and then we have no doubt people that we can talk to or liaise with or coordinate with, and they must also submit a disaster management plan, of which by now we only have, I think, agriculture that has submitted the disaster management plan. So other sector departments, they don't have those disaster management plans. We also requested them to submit the response plan. We don't have that joy. But fortunately, some of the department has indicated how they intervened with regard to this current disaster. Answering the second question on the communities that are settled on flat-lying or low-lying areas, this is basically the responsibility of the municipality, because it's important for the municipality to ensure that when communities settle on those risky areas, they need to really evacuate them immediately, because that area is not for settlement. And again, I think maybe to support that, the disaster management centers at the municipal level, they need to ensure that they implement the awareness campaigns, which will really advocate for risk reduction. But you don't have that, because most of the municipalities do not have capacity, especially with regard to disaster management center. You find that at some point you have the head of the center being a traffic officer doing public safety and disaster management at the same time. So that's the problem that we are really faced with as disaster management at local level. And I think SALGA also did a study on you know, assessing the capacity of the municipality office. They can also assist in responding to that capacity issue of the municipality. And the complaint that came from the municipality is that most of the projects, they, you know, identify projects and they put the project on the integrated development plans. But after approval, those projects are no longer there. So it's a problem of that kind of a nature. The issue of having to respond very long, not responding within the required time. I think with regard to immediate relief, we did well. People were released, people were given food parcels, immediate accommodation, they were evacuated on time. The only problem is the issue of post-rehabilitation and reconstruction, because the issue of the roads and bridges, we require sector departments to be part of that. They need to have a disaster management plan, they need to budget for that, but they are not budgeting for that. And with our reports that we have tabled to the inter-ministerial committee, it showed that, you know, sector departments are not coming on board, and that's the problem that we're having. Thank you.
Gigi, you didn't explain what happened to the previous people who occupied this position, these positions here. You just kept quiet. What was the reason for the diplomatic silence? You know, you of all people in this department, you know what our line is on this matter of disaster management. And you see, it's scary that people do not recognize that the issue of disaster management is so crucial to take proactive steps. The consequences are huge. One of the offices that was banned in Sixpack is Home Affairs. All right. There was a magistrate court that was banned in Durban somewhere. Okay. So, but we are not entering the field of the effects of climate change, if you believe, because there are others who are skeptical, that the extremes of weather or fires and stuff like that and other disasters are becoming heavy with huge consequences on people. So we must find a way in which this thing, we get it into the heads of people who are responsible to prioritize. Let me shut up there so that we get all other responses. Yeah. Can I just warn you? We are running on injury time. We must give Salga enough time as well. Yeah.
Yes. Mine is just to put the lady there. Whether I just want to know with these professional service providers, do they get the money from the one which we have budgeted for this 250, or maybe there's a separate and the budget for them? Thanks.
Okay, thanks. There is a separate funding for them. It's not within the 600. The 600 is only ring fenced for disaster post recovery and rehabilitation. It's not for.
No, Chair, I'm not sure if I quickly respond to what you asked, and I'm not sure I understand you, so please assist me. What we have done in the National Disaster Management Center, we have, as part of the overall department, we have a new organogram, a new structure, and the colleague that is joining us here today, and there's another colleague that is also not here, both of them are chief directors, they are new to the department, so there are two ladies we brought in. All the other colleagues that have been there, they are still there. In the department, the other directors that the committee may be familiar with, and if the committee can also recall, they are all men. Every single one of them, they are men at the senior management level. So it was a very conscious decision to bring in two professional disaster management members to come in at a higher level to come and manage the other colleagues. So I hope I'm answering you if I understood your question.
What's the highest position for disaster management in the department?
The highest position is a Deputy Director General, and that is the one that is still vacant chairperson. We did have interviews, and something happened there that resulted in us not being able to make appointment, but that is one of the priorities that we are trying to take forward with our acting minister. So that is the one vacancy at the DDG level, and the other vacancy, I'm just trying to find the organogram here, the other vacancy is the one on what we call provincial and manage provincial and local government support. So if you look at the slide there, it is the one on the extreme left. I mean, maybe you can't read it properly. It says branch, provincial, and municipal government support. And then in red there, apologies, it says acting. So we have the COO currently being a caretaker there. So hopefully we are going to appoint that one quite soon. And then the other one that is at the bottom here, right at the bottom, in the middle, Branch National Disaster Management Center, that is the other one that is also vacant, and my colleague is currently acting in that one. So those are the two.
Okay. Please be brief in your responses.
Thanks, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, honourable members. I think on the question of the percentages that we are using, especially with regard to the Minister of Public Accounts Committee, We are using percentages, and we are aware that some of the percentages that we are using, we are aware that we are looking at focusing on 28 municipalities. And the way in which we'll be choosing those municipalities, we'll be using the differentiated approach, which approach we'll be using information that is already within the department, where you have B4, B3, B2, B1, and also metros. Now, that is how we'll deal with the issue of percentages. And I think if honorable members are aware of the interaction that we have had with you on the 15th of March, there were quite a number of other questions that were raised with regard to some of municipalities saying they could not necessarily, or some of the provinces saying they could not establish municipal public accounts committees because of the oversight committees that they are having, and some of the municipalities having 7 councillors. In that regard, we are really going to be using the guidelines to say in instances like those, we need to be using a differentiated approach on those. With regard to the issue of the inspectorate that the honorable member has asked, I think with regard to the inspectorate, we have those 4 pillars where we talk prevention, detection, investigation, and responding. Now, within the department, we have only been having capacity that deals with prevention and not necessarily detection, investigation, and responding. Now, the unit is being established to also look at issues of detection and investigation. But we are not necessarily working as the department alone, but we just want to zoom into municipalities with other agencies like what the DG has indicated, the State Investigation Unit, so that when you have detected and investigated, you need within the department capacity that will be able to then look at other issues of responding. Like, for instance, if I may give an example, there is the bargaining council that SALGA is responsible for. Now, they have particular processes that should be involved in with regard to responding to those issues that have been investigated. And how then will you implement the systems bill that has been approved last week if you get somebody having done something that is wrong? So those are some of the things. So to just zoom into specifically, we are saying in getting skills that are coming into the inspectorate, we need to focus on the other pillars of anti-corruption, like, for instance, investigation and the detection. I think those are some of the questions that are related to the issue of public participation. I think the DM will handle that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think with regards to the question about what we exactly mean by supporting and facilitating, the DG gave a nice backdrop when he said that it's not always that the department itself is the primary implementer of many of these functions when it comes to water, sanitation, electrification, and so on. So I think it should be seen against that particular backdrop that we only support and facilitate the line function or sector departments in doing their work. In many cases, the municipalities themselves are responsible. But practically, what does it mean? I think that is really the question. What do we do when we say we facilitate, we support? I think it starts with planning. And I think the old approach was to look at planning in general to deal with the issue of how do we facilitate access to basic services. But I think we've gone a bit further into the detail. What we're saying now is at project level, at the municipality, on the ground, how do we get the municipality, the other stakeholders, the sector departments to work together to ensure that we have an integrated approach to human settlements, which are the primary recipients of the basic services. So I think that's the first area, it's the planning. I think secondly, it is also you know, around specifically removing blockages when it comes to municipalities. The Department of Human Settlements, Department of Water Affairs, when they encounter challenges in delivering their infrastructure to municipalities, it is our role as a department to ensure that when municipalities do not cooperate and there are certain approval processes at local level which hinders the implementation of projects, that we step in and we clear those blockages. So I think that is the second practical step that we take. So with regards to facilitating, but it's also about solving problems. You know, I think we should be proactive, and I think this is part of the general approach in the department, is how do we proactively solve problems at local level and not wait for a disaster? How do we plan adequately and all of those things? And I think that is behind the thinking when it comes to facilitating and supporting. With regards to the issue of ward-based cooperatives, you know, cooperatives is a key pillar of government's new growth path. In that particular document, it's called Social Enterprises, and the Minister of Economic Development made a pronouncement that cooperatives will be a key driver when it comes to delivering on those 5 million jobs that need to be created by 2020. So our department, even before the new growth path was released, has already started a program around cooperatives. And the thinking essentially is that the ward itself is a very good platform to start mobilizing people for entrepreneurial activity. But to only rely on small businesses is also not good enough. I think there's a tradition of collective businesses or social enterprises in South Africa. It is part of the historical legacy of this country, Stokvels and, you know, those forms of enterprises. And those took place at ward level, really, if you look at it in that way. And I think that is part of the thinking behind pursuing this agenda of ward-based cooperatives. But you also can't just set up a co-op or force people to get into formation. You have to tie it to an opportunity and to funding. And that is what we're exploring at the same time. I think, you know, there was also a question related to the private-public procurement managers forum. Many institutions, including the World Bank, have identified that one of the best levers for economic development and job creation at local level is public spending, public procurement. But at the same time, we need to ensure that in municipalities where you have big commercial enterprises operating, mines, you know, agricultural firms, big cooperatives, the old historical farming cooperatives, that those organizations, together with government, start procuring locally to ensure that money circulates within that area, thus strengthening what is there. And I think that is the thinking behind this, so that those who procure from the public purse at local level and those who procure, you know, from established private sector firms, they start applying their minds as to what they can produce and procure locally. And that is part of local economic development, is to stimulate local production, essentially. There was a question, and I just want to answer the one, what is the difference between the advisory council and the economic development agencies? Yes, we acknowledge that the agencies are there, the IDC has driven that particular program. Even they acknowledge that the agencies have very big challenges in terms of unlocking the economic potential of municipalities in the country. So this is part of an alternative model to deal specifically with tapping into the existing potential that there is. Now, at municipal level, and I think it goes right up to national government, there is a big mountain of mistrust between the private sector and government. That does not help job creation. And again, it's acknowledged that the private sector needs to be the key driver of employment creation, sustainable employment creation. What we do with the CWP is just temporary. We're just helping people out. But we need to create private sector sustainable jobs to really address the unemployment problem. So what we say at local level, we need to bring the captains of industry, commerce, agriculture, mining, together with municipalities so that they can start talking about the opportunities at local level. In the past, agencies wanted to identify the opportunities. as government, as agencies, as professionals, we are sometimes a bit useless at identifying business opportunities. Business people are better at identifying business opportunities because they use their balance sheets. They take the risk, invest money, and turn that into an enterprise which employs people. And I think that's the thinking behind it. So there is a bit of a difference, and we're not aiming to displace agencies. I think the idea is that even agencies form part of these structures, but work with the private sector in stimulating the local economy. Thank you, Chair.
Interesting stuff. I was just reading this morning that when you grow your own vegetables in your own backyard, you, however small a patch, you contribute towards limiting your carbon footprint. So when you procure locally stuff like that, you do that. So you don't have to be tracking stuff, taking millies in the Free State to Joburg to make Simba chips. I mean, really. Okay. Other questions left that need to be answered? Oh, at the back there.
Thanks, Dave. Just maybe to give a breakdown of the employment statistics in terms of SMS levels. We have a total of 103 SMS members that CDGC directors and senior managers. A breakdown of that would be 53 out of the 103 is women, so that contributes for about 51%. And then 50 out of that is men, that's 49%. That's our total SMS contribution. So we're actually doing better than the 50% in terms of women empowerment.
Yeah, we want it where it matters most. Where it matters most. Good progress, but you must go higher up.
To where?
Honorable member, you are really a good one. I see the department has a mole in the committee. Yeah. Sympathetic mole. No, thanks. That's, any other? Oh, yes, Timber. Thanks. I think we agree with the finding of the good governance network, the conclusion that we need to look at other forms of participation. And we are doing work now as part of the review of the white paper to actually look at going beyond just work committees, but look at other forms of participation. There's another project that we're working on, Chair, with jointly with Salga, looking at the state of ICTs in municipalities. And I think maybe arising out of that work, we can also look at how then do we tap into the social networks in terms of using technology as another form of participation. There was also a question on the Northwest.
Sorry, just before you move there. There's a councillor who was posting to me about in Mangaung internally, if you report this thing, the swiftness with which they get a response inside Mangaung, the system they have is highly sophisticated. And what he likes about it is how quickly he gets to get feedback and response. That things never lie anywhere else because of the way it is designed. So it's never mind externally, but internally for people who are running these things and how they get responses to their queries has a huge impact on the ability of people to carry out their work if they can get quick feedback and stuff like that. It's not about just about, you know, the minister, former minister of public works, I read in the newspaper that someone picked up his message later. Thank you very much to his friends on Facebook. I'm now heading somewhere else to represent the country. Cyber space is with us now. Yeah. Okay. And that day, you.
Mr. Mashlawe.
There was also a question on Northwest in particular, whether there's been any improvement, particularly in the municipalities where we had seconded. I think in Northwest in particular, we had four municipalities under 1-9. And then we seconded municipal managers through Section 154. I think in those municipalities, considering the state those municipalities were in before we intervened, I think there has been great sort of improvement but of course the challenge it's the sustainability when you move out of those instances, particularly the 1391. How do we sustain the good practices and systems that have been introduced? And I think maybe the legislation will also assist us in terms of how to address that challenge. But there has been improvement in those municipalities that we've supported.
Thanks,
Chair. You know, Chair, I have got a suggestion.
I don't know whether it was a propaganda stunt. Deputy Minister, I met Mashawe at the airport yesterday. Whether it was the department's propaganda stunt for me to see him there. That we are on the count in your province too.
No, certainly. Thanks, Chair. And in fact, Chair, I think I have a suggestion that maybe I should put to the committee so that we can fast track as well the issue of IT and that suggestion is that maybe the chair should lead by example. We must follow him on Facebook and Twitter. just one question that really was asking, what are we doing regarding the smaller municipalities that lack technical skills? And I think the committee would be pleased to know that the main and primary purpose behind the establishment of the special purpose vehicle is exactly to support your smaller municipalities, you know, your low capacity municipalities, which inevitably are the smaller municipalities. That's the primary purpose, and we are doing that in a twofold approach that says that whilst they have current need in terms of lack of skills, what then do we do to address that? And obviously our support then will be designed to provide that skills for those skills that they don't have, technical skills. So as a kind of a stopgap measure to ensure that they are able to deliver their services immediately. But we're also saying that the second leg of our support is a capacity building approach that says that whilst you are supporting that municipality in delivering those services, in delivering the infrastructure and services, you are also building capacity in that particular municipality at the same time, you know, so that by the time you exit as the STP at the end of the intervention itself or support program itself, you have left some capacity behind in that particular municipality to ensure that those skills are there. Thanks a lot, Chair.
Deputy Minister.
Very briefly. I think you're absolutely right. I think it's covered by Ngama. We agree there is a variety of forms of community participation, and our overemphasis on ward committees is actually narrow, too narrow. In fact, the ward committee, as you know, comprises up to 10 people, although in practice, when it functions, it includes community members as well. So I think we should pursue this further, because what's very clear is that we won't be able to deliver. We won't be able to significantly improve service delivery and development at municipal level unless we have much more active community participation. And I think what's good about the present government of President Zuma is that we've been much more open and transparent about the limited ability of the state to deliver, that we need active community participation, not just at municipal level, but at provincial and national level. And as you know, part of our outcome 9 is to ensure a much more revamped ward committee, but in and of itself, Chairperson, as you rightly say, that's not enough. And I think we should work together towards ensuring a much more enhanced opportunity for communities to participate. But beyond the state and statutory structures, communities through their own struggles are shaping space. Last week we heard about invited spaces. Those are the spaces that government offers people to participate in, but it's also invented spaces which people through their own struggles shape. And some of us argued there that you shouldn't polarize the two. The one is dialectically related to the other, but that's for another discussion. And then on the issue of UCLGA, in Tlacanipo, Brutus Malada and Hilton went, I think, on Friday to yesterday, Sunday, to the UCLGA conference in Zambia. And I think I should brief you fuller outside, Chairperson, but the current chair of the UCLGA that used to be based here in Tswane is from Botswana, I gather. And the other UCLGA is based in Rabat. So we just call it Tswane and Rabat. Obviously, any organization that has its HQ in Morocco is not acceptable to many governments in the continent because the AU doesn't recognize Morocco. We are part, our government, I mean, our ministry is part of a five-person team that was appointed in Cameroon last year, one from each part of the continent, to facilitate dialogue between the Rabat-based and the Tswana-based one. And we haven't got very far in that regard because the next conference was to be held in March in Côte d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, and it hasn't occurred. But we still are committed to dialogue and getting one continental association, including those who are linked to the Rabat-based UCLJ and those who are linked to the Tswane-based UCLJ. Now, the fact that the president comes from Botswana doesn't mean that the HQ will necessarily move. But these are issues Ntlaka Nipo need to brief the ministry about. As far as our commitment to UCLGA goes, it was based, I think, on the presumption that we, as South Africa, would be hosting the HQ and for now the chairperson. Father Smangaliso Mukachu has stepped down last week. As far as our fees go, we'll continue to pay them until the resolution occurs of the two continental associations. But it seems to us imprudent, inconsistent to the PFMA, unproductive, and you will yourselves hold us, all us here before you make us account, were we to just liberate that money that's allocated to them without clarity on where UCLG Tswana based is going. But at, outside this meeting, we can engage more with the chair in that regard. Thank you.
What's left? Didn't you have any other thing else that you were going to respond to?
Not that I know, Chairperson.
Yes.
Oh, yes. The program and new councillors, you're absolutely right, colleague. That's crucial. There's a multiplicity of approaches. There's CELGA, COGTA, Ministry of Finance initiative. You know full well what happens each time we get a new set of councillors, and regrettably this time, once again, we're going to have a very significant number of new councillors. My sense is if the majority party's choices are anything to go by, it seems that 65% of the ANC's councillors are not serving councillors. So if you use that as a barometer, it's reasonable to assume that the majority will not be serving councillors, which of course exaggerates the challenges. But between CELGA, National Treasury and ourselves, we are very committed to doing what we can to ensure that councillors are inducted into the new local government system. The various parties, not least the majority party, have already started that program. Presumably the other parties do their own programs. And I think that you must keep us on our toes. You should constantly ask us what we're doing, where things are going. But CELGA also no doubt will have something to say when they report to you in a moment.
Yes, you haven't responded at all to the service delivery issue that you said and what I said, all of them. They have not responded.
Can I raise, Jefferson, you're right. You see, I think we should be clear as a department.
Yeah.
When I was a chair, like you, I would never have allowed this. So you can't come on the other side and say suddenly, you know, you're not going to do that. Actually, it should be very simple. We can't come to a committee, DG. And whoever else here. You can't come to a committee and not go methodically through what was said in the last budget review and set plan review and where we are now. In fact, in committees that I've been around with nothing, we start with that. And what was very good with the previous minister we had, well, two of them actually, to be quite frank, they would start by saying you raised 24 questions. And there was a reply to each of them. And then the minister picks up, because the minister is ultimately accountable. Well, mm-hmm. I'm here on behalf of the minister right now. That should have been my job. Actually, I've been errant. Actually, you should target it to me. But there's been a million things happening, and and so on. But legally, it's not acceptable that we have failed to respond directly and precisely and concisely to the 80 or so questions. We have trusted them, not just in your review of our last year's budget and strat plan, but also in the quarterly reviews you do of our progress. So really, it's not on. We apologize. We commit ourselves this won't happen again. And the DG, we have to operate in terms of that. We should respond to their report to Parliament. And really, that is quite errant on our side. Thank you.
Yes, the department has records of how they've done this in the past. So we're not asking. That's why I said Elroy knows this. This is what you've asked me for, and so on. I also know, because I participated in some in a meeting where half portion progress was given, of some sort, not entirely to details that could have been provided. So we need that. We need that. It's important because that's our sorting out the relationship between the committee and the department and the oversight responsibility we have. Yeah. Okay. Let's.
I think we should commit ourselves within a month of replying in writing, and you call us back. You know, you can even do it before over the difficulties around the election.
Yeah.
But if you want, we should come back. But certainly, we should give it to you in writing within the next 2 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That will be very helpful, so that we in the report we see the reports. I've been asking the reports, the budget review recommendation report. They are very specific, very explicit stuff that relates to some of the things that you talked to here about which progress would have been useful to hear about. Okay, thank you very much. We will naturally be, if members raise questions that require your additional feedback, we'll call on you to do that, to provide us with additional information before we wrap things up and so on. Let me ask Salga to come in with his presentation here. No, not this time. Yeah, it's okay. You can go and do it for a minute. So, what are the distribution papers? I see there are people who are giving themselves a break. No. It's fine. Take a 1.5 minute break. Fine. Yes.
Okay, this is Councillor Johnson, welcome with your team. It's now your opportunity to talk to us on the Salga story.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, officials present, members of the media. Indeed, I would like to make some brief remarks and hand over then to the CEO, Mr. George, who will then...
Sorry, just before you proceed, just to report that we received a formal apology from the Chairperson, Councillor Amos Masondo. He's saying he's dealing with the pick-it-up story in the city.
Yes. Chairperson, this is part of my written to apologize on behalf of Alderman Masondo. The strategic plan presented here today was approved by the Salga National Executive Committee at its last meeting. And indeed, we would like to say that this conclusion of work of a specific term of office of Salga. We will have our National Members Assembly in September, when we will elect new membership, leadership, and indeed that will be subject to review at our following Members Assembly. The local government is in transition and dynamic, so is Salga. Just as municipalities will review their plans during this financial year, so Salga will do so when its new leadership will review the plans of the organization going forward. A main focus of the first quarter will be to manage the transition of local government as new municipal leadership comes to grip with the implementation of the election manifesto. This will happen while there is continued and pressured demand for service delivery. Another aspect of the transition is to be managed lies in the area of labor relations. It is the final year of the three-wage agreement, and Salga will be tasked after consulting with all other role players to manage this process of wage negotiations and benefits. Mr. George will refer to the process of council induction, but this we have to take into account takes place throughout the year, commencing in July. And in particularly, the question that normally arises this time around, whilst we are in election mode, why are certain things happening now? It's happening because, in fact, it's part of our service delivery business implementation plans, and it is because in the cycle of our financial reporting cycle, to conclude work. SALGA is committed to the implementation of Outcome 9, in particularly for the sector, and its strategic plan is clear evidence of this. We have to guard, however, against it that SALGA is being viewed as an institution that is directly responsible for service delivery insofar as citizens. It is there to service its members in terms of coordination, support, lobbying, as well as capacity building. And therefore, it means that whilst we as an institution need to be evaluated based on our core business in order that we are able to utilize the funding that we receive effectively. SALGA, in fact, has got chronic financial constraints. It will be alluded to. Achievements over this year is, in fact, the unqualified audit report that we have received after some years of disclaimers. And we can assure the Chairperson Portfolio Committee that if we have to evaluate value for money, indeed it has happened. And we are, in fact, proud to say that the steps that we have put in place to ensure that it has happened. The challenge is to how do we reposition SALGA's financial difficulties that it has based on its membership, based on the Organized Local Government Act that need to be reviewed. And in that context, I think that once we have attended to these matters, that we are able to achieve our objectives. The challenge to us both in local government is, in fact, how do you ensure that you have validated audit reports based on evidence? And it is also linked to oversight that I do think that can be strengthened based on some of the centers of excellence, where it's not only the Auditor General, but also external audit committee, as well as oversight, that in a combined report then present it to the either other institutions like yourself, if you have to deal with local government. Chairperson, I hand over to Mr. Paulila George, who is our CEO, to present to you the annual performance plan of SALGA.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good day to all members of the committee. I would build from what Councillor Johnson has raised in terms of the focus areas of organized local government this year. I will start with your permission, Chairperson, to indicate the team of management members that are accompanying Councillor Johnson with me to this committee in 1 minute. My colleague on my left, his name is Siana Nkhatle. He is responsible for policy and strategy in the office of the CEO. And my colleague next to Councillor Johnson is Johan Mettler. He's the head of governance and IGR at SALGA. And if I'm not missing anyone, Mr. Lance Jewell is a doorkeeper. Is responsible for operations at SALGA as the COO of SALGA. That's the team we have, Chairperson. And in progressing, Chairperson, we are presenting a story of continuity and change at SALGA. We came several times to this committee talking about the focus area of our organization since the beginning of the first term in 2007 up to 2012. And In our approach to dealing with the mandate we have, we draw our focus from the four key pillars of SALGA's mandate, that of being a representative body of the local sphere, that of being the advisor and supporter of transformation in local government, and that of being an employer body and the profiler of local government in the sector. The continuity and change agenda, Chairperson, as you would see on this busy slide, the only story it seeks to communicate is that somewhere in the middle of our 2007-2012 plan, consistent with the changes that have happened at national level in terms of focus of government in the medium-term policy statement, we had to review our priorities. At the time, we were focusing on the five-year local government strategic agenda as a main thrust of supporting local government transformation. Then emerged the question of the local government turnaround strategy, as well as the medium-term strategic framework 2009-2014 of national government, and the reinforcement of MDGs. All of these have shaped our refocusing and reprioritization going forward. We will talk in detail around our response to how our mandate is executed within the context of the 10-point plan. So in short, these are the priorities that we have as an organization. These are not the only things that we focus on SALGA, but they constitute the apex priorities of the organization. Our business plan is in detail around all of these. They range from councillor support up to climate change response measures at municipal level. And this is a critical area that the committee raised last year when we had engagement on the 10th of March, that you ought to respond directly to how local government would implement mitigating measures as well as issues of migration. In terms of continuity, Chairperson, we will run briefly in terms of the areas that the committee last year also asked us, as you present, also indicate not only successes but highlight the impact of the work that you are doing as a body for local government. And these are some of the small highlights that we have just lifted up in each of our core focus area. If you look at municipal service delivery, the area of water service provision has been critical and raised by members, and we have, in consultation with DWAF, through their program that they have hosted at SALGA, prepared guidelines to empower municipalities on the regulation of water services better. We know that in districts and local, there's a responsibility for provider and regulator role. So these guidelines seek to respond on how to better advise our members. Around the issue of level 2 accreditation, around human settlement, outcome 8, again, we are proud that through our engagement in partnership with COCTA and engaging Treasury, we have successfully lobbied for human settlements accreditation of metros and other secondary city on a gradualized basis to receive level 2 accreditation. And as we speak, 9 municipalities have received this, and we are working on a plan at SALGA to adequately capacitate them to understand the framework within which that accreditation is to be implemented. Around electricity distribution industry structuring, as we all know by now, that as of December last year, Cabinet took a decision to wind up the operations of EDI. Again, we think we have worked very well at the level of engagement to actually make every role player understand the full magnitude of EDI restructuring and how its implications would impact on municipalities. And through those engagements, it became very clear that challenges of restructuring are unlikely not to impact on the viability of municipalities. And quite a lot of representations by SALGA have resulted in the review of the approach. The question of disaster management assessment, as indicated in the earlier presentation by my colleague at COCTA, again, we have worked very strongly around developing guidelines and also undertaking some study. We would like to confirm what has been stated by COCTA's presentation, that indeed findings at municipal level paint a picture that requires a drastic engagement with municipalities, particularly in creating understanding for them around the various roles that are envisaged in the Disaster Management Act. There seems to be a lot of organizational rearrangements and administrative and other related policy measures that must be in place to make this very critical area to be properly understood and incorporated in the planning of municipalities. There's a clear plan in place that we're working with COCTA to make sure that those findings are realized. Around issues of entrenching gender equality and women empowerment, we are progressing very well, Chairperson. And we have also worked on the human development framework that amplifies exactly the progressive attainment of MDGs and there is now a plan for municipalities to be able to locate themselves within the human development framework. Around the issues of migration and its implications for service delivery, we have also worked on a clear policy position and framework that seeks to facilitate social cohesion between various role players at municipalities and also equip municipalities on dealing with the impact and patterns of migration around integrated planning at the municipalities. The practical dimension of LED around the contribution to job creation, again, this work done by SALGA has resulted in very strategic partnership with key players who are success stories around this matter. Partnership with Swedish Association, the Commonwealth, the Industrial Development Corporation, and other relevant bodies like German Corporation. We now have a clear program that is assessing, for example, 10 municipalities on red tape reduction measures to look at what are the things that are impeding micro development of enterprises at municipalities, but also dealing with the major investment development. So that any investor has a blueprint that says these are the areas that would assist a municipality to respond quickly on these areas. We also have partnerships for municipalities that are in rural areas, for instance in Limpopo, linking them with the counterparts in India, and we think that there is a lot of success that such partnerships have yielded. One of the areas that has not received much attention at a national scale, Chairperson, is the issue of how do we deal with informal trading in our municipalities. Each municipality has got its own role, but others are unable to deal with this question due to absence of a policy other than bylaws to deal with it as a policing function. We mobilized all municipalities last year in November, convened a national summit that has emerged with quite a lot of promising measures that seeks to elevate this question into a major strategic issue at a municipality to act as a catalyst to bring growth to this informal sector and graduate it to the national sector. So we are now working at measures that create uniformity across the sector around this matter. Around the question of developing direct bylaws and also to take a more proactive role for supporting this, those are some of the key successes around this. The collective agreements on disciplinary procedures fraught with all the challenges in the collective bargaining space. However, we now have a much more clearer role on how to deal with this matter. We have also worked on the wage cap collective agreement, reached it in April last year after a protracted strike. But now what it seeks to do is to have a positive impact of creating a predictable, consistent, and disciplined regime within the sector. And municipal governance, Chairperson, around the guidelines on the transition, we now have a clear plan to guide the sector pre-18th of May this year, post-18th of May, and how municipalities need to act from day one live that they are declared council. We have worked collectively and also complemented some of the regulatory role that COCTA has worked on in terms of clarifying those matters. The also hands-on governance support that we have provided in specific municipalities right across have also created a supportive environment around this. On capacity building, we have also steadily moved towards creating a supportive institutional reform mechanism that will ensure that the current amendments to the Systems Act find traction with a clear supportive policy environment. We convened a national summit of local government last year that will now culminate into a human resource development policy framework that will complement the national human resource development plan as driven by the Department of Higher Education and Economic Development. And also the Councillor Induction Program is ready and to be implemented by July. And areas around various learning events to cross-pollinate municipalities on areas of HIV and AIDS, climate change, public participation, those have worked very well. On climate change, Chairperson, we are hosted as a country for COP17 in Durban. Again, we have contributed in the Green Paper on climate change, in particular bringing to the fore the dimension of local government implications around climate change response plan. And the area of also organizing the Green Economy Summit and Expo, leading summit that SALGA has played a role this year in convening to make sure that we look at the aspect of creating the entrepreneurial issues around the climate change. This one is a small issue but very important. One of the key issues is how do you gauge your membership response barometer on the impact of the work you do on tracking the issues that they raise. We have recently implemented this to improve our turnaround strategy and also to improve and perfect our internal systems insight, as well as reviewing the five-year strategy. So these are just key highlights, Chairperson, of continuity, and those programs are retained in the current 2011-2012 plan, and this plan has been drafted in accordance with the guidelines issued by National Treasury for all entities and national sector departments. As I've indicated, Chairperson, this plan that we have has superseding the five-year local government strategic agenda, yet retaining certain elements of the change agenda that we have and repackage where necessary. But what is the real anchor of our plan is the outcome 9 in terms of contributing in our relevant way on how to build a responsive, accountable, and effective system of local government. We have looked at all the LG Task 10-point plan priorities as outlined, and they have provided an outcomes-based system for us in replacing our five-year local government strategic focus of our five-year plan. In articulating these 10 priority outcomes for 11-12, Chairperson, none of them are in the order of top priority. We are merely listing them. And in so listing them, the majority of them reflect continuity. But others are very important in embedding the stability of SALG as an organization, stability of the governance sector, but linking directly to what outcome 9-6 to respond on this matter. We are looking at the issue of councillor support that remain largely unresolved, and some of those that have been resolved, we think that they are a very building block to realizing aspects that remain unresolved on areas of councillor support, and we're working with different bodies at the level of COCTA as a ministry, at the level of the Commission on Remuneration of Councillors, but also linking that with the ongoing capacity support for councillors. On service delivery, again, looking at the refinement of the policy environment to make sure that we have better targeting to realize a maximum impact of our engagement on service delivery. On social cohesion issues, economic development, labor relations, all of these areas, without going to all of them in detail, Chairperson, are articulated in the SALGA overall performance plan, and we have attached which elements will form part of our continuous change agenda, which ones are priority outcomes. And we are merely linking them there to say in that detail there's quite a number of KPIs that are linked to these areas, as explained under the footnote. In broad detail, Chairperson, we are confident that our focus has gradually moved towards directly supporting municipalities, and this is a breakdown on the strategic deployment of our energy in the organization on all these areas and so on. So you will see that gradually the balance is on the profiling of the sector, support and advice, the lobby and advocacy, and knowledge management. All of those constitute cumulatively 89% of the direct outcome focus outside, and the internal capacity is assuming 11%. If you look at this 4 years ago, we had to deal with a lot of change issues that had an unhealthy balance of focusing on revamping the organization more than 50% and focusing 50% outside. Yet, as we go forward now, we're fairly confident that 89% directly focuses on supporting the transformation of the sector. On councillor support, these are the details under each of the priority outcome 1, what exactly we'll be doing under councillor support. So we've just given some few elements of what we'll be doing around that area and how it responds to the LGTA. On the area of service delivery, again in detail, Chairperson, these are the areas of the work. I think in the interest of time, I will not read one by one, merely to express that we have listed some of the critical areas for the committee to take note of what will be the deployment of the focus of SALGA on that area. On the area of social cohesion, again, these are the work elements that would shape our engagement to drive the issues of human development in the sector. On economic development, one of the key issues will be around the land use management bill, which is before Parliament, and how we seek refinements that must improve the spatial economy in local government and deal with the speed with it which development issues must be dealt at local government to drive integration, the reforming of the inclusive agenda of municipalities and sustainable agenda. We will also be looking at areas of reviewing IDPs and looking at alignment in particular and sampling a number of municipalities. In the Eastern Cape, for instance, we are targeting 7 municipalities. In the Northwest, on broadband policy, as indicated earlier on, as well as LED assessment around this area. This has not detracted us from the focus that is ongoing on EPWP. We still remain largely a focus of our work. On labor relations, I have indicated around this matter, but this year, because we have a new regime of collective bargaining that we are working on, one of the areas was that we need to capacitate municipalities to handle this matter themselves. So we'll be focusing this year on ensuring that we have got adequate capacitation of key skills within municipalities to handle these matters and continue to represent municipalities on conciliation, arbitration, as well as the implementation of priorities on stabilizing the sector. Sound financial management, again, is an ongoing partnership work with COCTA in terms of looking directly at the question of over-regulation and under-regulation of the sector, which areas we need to ease the space within which the sector feels under siege or the sector feels it needs more regulation on. So we're partners around this engagement. Again, engagement with other bodies like these offices and home affairs on areas of improvement of billing, targeting disclosures of people around what they can afford and so on. All what is necessary around creating integrity of data municipalities. SALGA is working with those bodies to present to municipalities innovative ways to deal with this issue. Training of municipal finances, again, come August, we already have signed agreements with Treasury and resolve those to move on a go-ahead, go-live basis to train councillors on municipal finance. It will take two forms. It will be on a generic scale to understand the overview of MFMA, but directly to target MMCs deployed on municipal finances to have modular training or much more on a longer scale for 6 months. So we think that we have elevated that one strategically as a key area of creating a stability in managing governance of municipalities insofar as finances and budgets are concerned. The local business tax submission again for Treasury, the position paper on approach to indigenous policy, we're targeting these areas as part of our ongoing onslaught on improving finances at municipalities. The state municipal governance again is one of the areas that we will be focusing on this year, in particular to make sure that we have got finalized guidelines on how to strengthen the oversight mechanism, not only to look at the question of MPACs as a key pillar, but look at how we can make sure that there is a better utilization of the envisaged oversight role of portfolio committees in Section 79 and Section 80 committees and what other structures need to be refined at municipalities to improve governance. The question of IGR structures with clear mandated position and councillor representatives again is constitute the core focus of our work as SALGA. We will also be looking at issues of internal audit. We have started in some municipalities by assisting them on their minimal issues. We don't have capacity fully at SALGA internal audit, but where we need to be in place and say, this is how to put in place an audit charter. This is how to put in place a rolling 3-year audit plan. And this is how you must follow on those areas. This is but one of the elements that we are focusing on. And also reinforcing where there is the varying degree of capacity between district and local to advise where to locate the internal audit capacity at the appropriate category, but be available for the support of the entire sector. The district learning network is one of those areas, and also the issues around integrating the climate change response plan. On reforming organized local government, there will be a dedicated discussion with the committee around June on this matter. But we have done a lot of work, Chairperson, that is taking into account the 14-year evolution of organized local government. What challenges it has experienced around its voluntarism model, and how do we make sure that we build sustainability of SALGA. So far, the situation is very much untenable from its own focus as an organization and so on. And we'll deal with that in detail later. The climate change in detail, Chairperson, these are some of the areas that we will be focusing on around building and supporting climate change plans and assessing the implication of energy efficiency measures. We have, as at last year in December, engaged on a partnership with Swedish Development Agency to look at how to support municipalities over the next 3 years on energy-saving measures to complement the national objectives of the 20-year plan on energy resource plan. And that plan is progressing very well at its pilot phase now, and we're targeting at about 15 municipalities around that. One of the critical areas I've indicated, what is the capacity of SALGA to lead the sector in the context of its own mandate? We are fast approaching over the next 18 days the transition of the sector, and what we have worked on, Chairperson, is to articulate a guideline that must take the sector in the pre, in the during, and the post phase of elections and direct our energies towards that. We have now worked on an area that identifies pre-election support measures to really create a transitional arrangement to say, municipalities, as you start the financial year, you are bound by law to prepare this and that. It doesn't wait for transition. There has to be a predictable regime in place. Budget must be passed. Plans must be in place within a certain period. How do we deal with these issues? So we are able to guide all of them how they will handle all these issues. But this is not exhaustive. But these are some of the areas that we thought are very important for all municipalities as they will be emerging. The development of ongoing communication around these matters, what will happen on day one that the council has to be established after the elections. Our guidelines talk to how we will convene the council and all associated issues around this. And during the elections, this is the work that we'll be doing as SALGA to look at outlining the roles of municipal managers and ensuring that we have clear support on the activities of the new council once it is elected. Post-elections, we'll be detailing our work on the councillor induction program. We have a clear plan in place, Chairperson, but maybe in the interest of time, we might not articulate what we have done. We have prepared copies in case it will be required to show us to show the committee the full plan. We have also prepared copies that we have circulated, and we'll be looking at guiding the new councillors on the role that they need to do. But at the same time, looking at our own internal transition as SALGA, because it will also impact on the organization's governance arrangements. The post-elections, again, on the sitting of councils, what needs to be followed and so on, the detail is there. And looking at the budget for the period going ahead, Councillor Johnson has indicated the ongoing challenge of SALGA as resourcing and the inevitable, the unenviable task of chasing for resources to perform your constitutional role. It has really put SALGA in a very difficult situation, and I think we have shared with the committee in the last financial year that we continue to have our work undermined due to lack of resources to execute. And I think the committee made the point last year that we have a compelling case for this matter. We have developed a clear funding model, and we have engagements with COCTA, and we have engagements with National Treasury, and there has been relief in certain instances where we had challenges, particularly on the end of the year this year. And we remain optimistic that this matter is receiving attention in terms of ensuring that it doesn't bring down the organization's energy going forward. So we remain optimistic that positive outcomes would be realized. So this is just to reflect how work has happened so far in terms of the revenue sources, the membership levies for SALGA, and the grant that we realize. We think that very strongly it is very small, and it continues to be the insignificant part of our funding resource. Where we place reliance on membership levies, the challenge is that we are unable to receive members at the time. Today, it is the 19th of April, Chairperson. The plan we're presenting before you, we only have managed to collect about 7% of levies as at April. Yet the plan compelling and committing us to perform, we do not have resources to perform the plan. The transition of the sector would only enable municipalities from July, after they have passed their budget, some of them will pass August or September, depending on what the outcomes is. It directly impacts on our ability to receive resources. And even when that time comes, it doesn't mean a municipality will pay the full amount because of the voluntary nature of the situation. So it continues to impact negatively and places SALGA in a difficult spot of performing compulsory constitutional tasks with no resources to do. So we appeal for collective support, Chairperson, to make sure that this untenable situation is reversed. The revenue budget, again, this is just a breakdown of how it is allocated, but all it places is that this kind of reliance is really not assisting us from executing all the strategic priorities that we have outlined. This is just a breakdown on how resources are allocated in each of the outcomes and how they have been spread across all provinces. You will see that KwaZulu-Natal is not included here, and we have engaged with the committee last year due to a number of challenges that continue to remain unresolved. They operate as a separate entity of their own, and there has been political processes that have been deployed to manage the situation. So far, it caused a lot of harm in the organizational cohesion and focus in terms of resources. This is just a breakdown in terms of all the components of the department, how the resources are spread in terms of the provincial focus and the provincial program cost allocation. And we think, Chairperson, the intervention that could come positively is not that much, but it is significant for our own operation. And our funding model identifies a gap of around 77 million minus the current allocation to make us function better as an organization. We have made all these proposals, Chairperson, without getting into full detail, to say that if we were to receive this share of 77 million on the 2011-2012 as identified in our funding model, it will take us somewhere less the current grant. And in the ensuing outer years, it is on a reducing scale because we would have stabilized a number of areas that at the moment continues to place us in a difficult zone. So on that note, thank you very much, Chairperson. We are ready for guiding the transition and the capacitation of the sector and continue with our programs that we have in impacting on the sector. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Members, there's a report. Any questions, comments? Yes, Honorable Ntlangeto, Honorable Nelson.
Chair, thanks.
Speak to your mic, please.
Thank you. I'll firstly maybe appreciate the improvement on their Auditor General's report from disclaimers to unqualified. I think they are exemplary to as a people who are leading municipalities to other municipalities who aren't able to do the same. And also appreciate on how they structured their report and their presentation. It responds to some other questions and recommendations made in our previous meetings with SALGA. Chair, I just want to come in the first slide of the presentation. There were some women's summit and other summits that they had as SALGA. I don't mean that we must be invited, but I just want to check whom from other stakeholders they've invited, because from the portfolio committee, I think, especially the women one, I would expect maybe one of the women from this committee would be there to observe in those summits they had, so that we'd be able, sitting here, to know which nyani, there were some fruitful discussions pertaining women in those summits. And also, Chair, I just want to check. There are some
recommendations of saying they will be having on labor relations, will develop human resource strategy and others, but to me they are just like a wish list. They are no time frame, which is from where to when. I would love maybe to for them. Normally they are afraid to do like traditional affairs, to put 1 year time frame just to develop a strategy. So I would just want to know from them, not just to put them as a wish list. They must have some time frame on how are they going to deal with that one. On counselor support, on their last presentation, Chair, we asked for a breakdown in, especially in some other municipalities, especially on the programs that the councillors are with CETA. So in this presentation, there is none. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nelson.
Thanks, Chair. I think the view is shared on the audit opinion. Just I'd be interested to know the levies from municipalities. What percentages does really come in from municipalities, especially your low capacity municipalities, because many of the municipalities are cash strapped. So what percentage comes in? And then again on the Auditor General's presentation last week, is it part of the training program or induction program to maybe take municipalities, you know, when this induction program is done, to show municipalities exactly what the audit opinion is, especially those coming in, because I believe that to go anywhere you must know where you are. So is that part of the induction program, or will there be sessions given to that so that incoming municipalities know exactly what their state of finances are? And because I don't recall this being done in the past, Jefferson. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
I really appreciate the achievement, because now they are telling us what they have planned and what they haven't, what they have achieved. But what I don't see is what they haven't achieved. Maybe it's somewhere, but I couldn't see it. I only see the achievement. One could have really liked to see the challenges and the not achieved. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Ntangeto, I think you're really performing well in identifying the good stuff. You're very exemplary. That's a very useful model to work with. For the struggle towards clean audit. Is that what you should be saying? Yeah, that's good. And the report as well, I agree that it's very... What I also like is the continuity and changes that are taking place. It's a very useful way to deal with stuff that's been there before and not to treat material as if it never existed. It's a very useful way to present the report. This is the stuff that we've had all along. These are the changes that are introduced through the changing electoral mandates and stuff like that. And so that's a very useful way to handle it. Now, the KZN story. The DG is still here. The Constitution recognizes only one organized local body. So I don't know what it means by recognized, but so on what basis does anybody engage with KZN structure, whatever they call themselves now, if they are not part of SALGA, so to speak, materially, practically? I'm just saying that this matter needs to be attended to urgently. We must find it, both politically and otherwise, I think it must be dealt with. This is a bad one. We can't have people withdrawing, seceding from a national class. That makes sense. It makes no political sense to me. I don't know where they got the money to do that from. So I think it's something that must be dealt with urgently. Compliance and performance. Salga, you're a voice of municipalities.
You advocate on their behalf.
One of the observations of the Auditor General is that there's gross
non-compliance with the law.
So the issue of performance, their ability to perform the key tasks for which they have, presumably is impacted upon both positively or negatively on their compliance with the law in some way. So that this particular one, okay, you've got induction staff and so on. So again here, we must talk about the challenges that someone is pointing out there. So this is a very serious challenge. Because in some instances, I don't believe it because people don't know what the law says. It's just a disregard of the law. Okay. Including payment of fees. It's not law, but it's an expectation. It's just a symptom of that problem of dealing with those issues. So I'm concerned about what you as an organized formation say and talk about in your members' assembly and so on, that it requires attention. The other one that I want to raise, I want to link up with the issue I raised with the Department of Traditional Leaders about their intention to recess a socioeconomic profile of areas under Amakhosi, so to speak, which are in municipalities. I said that we worked with, you were here, with the, the census 2011 were presented to us, there was also a discussion around the research and information statistics, generally speaking, and we, this issue about the, at the district level. Firstly, building capacity at the, your district learning network. That's a very interesting stuff that Saga says it has. It's there. What you don't say is what you do, what it does, what has happened about there. I knew before that there were forums that were held of district to discuss specific issues that face district theme conferences, so to speak, of district. So what's happening now? So for me, it would be interesting to... I'm wondering aloud whether it isn't actually appropriate that we should be pushing for research capacity to be built at the district level to serve a variety of reasons. That we should pressurize both Treasury and others to fund the building of capacity at that level so that the information that government works with is up to date. If we argue that IDPs are planning tools for all of government, then the information that is used there must be the one that is the most up-to-date to inform the rest of the plans of everybody else. So I think locating it there, building it there strongly is very important to make it up-to-date. And it could perhaps be part of the district learning network themes and issues to debate and discuss and to perhaps build towards. And my final comment really is a comment that... I listened to both Salga and Samu present at the climate change white paper process. And I think you should look at the Samu presentation. That's one of the best papers I've seen on climate change at local level. That there are issues there that do not require anybody else but municipalities, right from the onset. In other words, it is within municipalities to take action and stuff in a very fascinating way to make for powerful, sustainable development, very ecologically informed decision-making across the board. So look at that. I'm recommending that you look at that SAMU presentation and tell us how you think it can work. How you have there are convergences or divergences, so to speak, and why? What are the reasons for those divergences, if any? Because I think that would be a very useful way to work with that staff there. Yeah, your funding conundrum is a very... I also realize that this is one area that requires a special session
between the committee, the department, and SALGA. And we talk about nothing else. But perhaps this is what we should identify for post-election item to debate and talk about, and go into very specific issues there, so that we can deal with it. We agree that the non-payment of fees is a bigger symptom. It includes the Auditor General's fees as well. So it's just not... So we have to find a way around this matter, both matters, because the... Okay. All right, let me stop there. Any comments from yourself?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the members of Portfolio Committee for the accolades. We've listened and we've acted upon the what is actually a common sense issue with regard to obtain a clean audit in terms of conducting good governance. Chairperson, the comments that you've made related to the Auditor General, the fact of non-compliance issues, I would like to link to the general trend that we sometimes find from the Auditor General, to say no leadership was shown to act upon the matter. And that I include the KZN issue, and in the similar vein, non-payment of the City of Cape Town, for instance, or delayed payment from the City of Cape Town, which is non-compliance, if I have to single out, and not just single out City of Cape Town, but also others. But this trend that there is, if we engage in legal process as far as defaulters are concerned, insofar as municipalities are concerned, it will be protracted, and we're not going to get anywhere. As far as we have to deliver a service, either we have to suspend then the benefits that a member has got insofar as acting on behalf of that member in the bargaining council, representing that member there, which is also a cost element to us. Therefore, I think that the resultant effect to all of these matters is a change in the organized local government legislation in order to define the compulsory membership of municipalities as members of SALGA. I think that insofar as the research capacity of district municipalities, it must be strategic centers of local government. It must ensure that we develop these tools for and on behalf of the local municipalities where it's a matter that affects all of us in that space, that economic space that we occupy or land space that we occupy. And we've indicated that we are moving in towards that direction as far as the local economic development is concerned, assisting and supporting on informal trade and so forth, because local economic development hasn't been properly defined, and that is why we will get some contestation of everybody wants to act as far as the local economic development is concerned, and job creation. Thank you very much. We're taking heed to the question of some of the presentation. We have engaged with the minister, the minister to organize COP17, and we will demonstrate centers of excellence in South Africa. The funding conundrum, we welcome the fact that we will have a special session post-election. And I want to say that generally what are we doing as far as district learning networks are concerned? The former speaker of Dr. Kenneth Kahunda was a
prominent member of the district learning network, but I can say to you, it.
That's very long.
But the issue is that it leads to exchange of knowledge exchanges. This is by different municipalities. Exchange of tools that can assist municipalities to perform better, both technologically as well as institutional tools.
Mr. Johnson, sorry, man.
Yeah.
Has that happened? What I'm asking is, has that happened?
It has happened.
It happened a long time ago.
No, it still happens, but it's not reported on. I can say, for instance...
Including by yourself. You've never reported on the work they are doing. In other words...
Yeah. I can say to you that, for instance, there are 26 municipalities, if I have to talk about my own municipality, that is using our performance management system that was developed by in-house, by officials in-house, which cost us 10,000 rand and not the 2 million that municipalities are paying, as an example. So, Chairperson, I would like to ask the CEO to answer the balance of the question. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll sample only three, and my colleague Siana, Johan on governance and district learning network, governance laws, they will respond on those ones. On the Women's Summit that was convened last year, I don't have the details, Chairperson. My apology in terms of the list of stakeholders. But maybe if it did not reach the attention of the committee, it could have been an oversight, maybe from the side of our organizing team. And it's certainly that we will take and correct going forward the deficiency. The second issue is around the capacity building, the details of the plan. We situated a separate plan that shows what our plan is in each province and what the coverage would be. There are instances where we will be focusing on a metro as a unit of training and focus. There will be instances where there's group training across all three categories at a provincial level. We also want to introduce an innovative part this year to look at utilizing outgoing councillors and those who are not outgoing but have an experience in those specific portfolios to be on the trenches to train the councillors as well. We are working on the methodologies now, as well as the modules with the LGCTA, as well as COCTA, in terms of ensuring that our plans are well balanced in terms of covering issues. We are also in the process of engaging with Palama to look at certain elements that will be ongoing from a leadership strength of view that they can look at. And DBSA, in terms of its own Vulindlela Academy, will be one of the learning sites that we'll be looking at around this matter. I've already mentioned Treasury for PFMA in terms of the detail. So it will be immediate after election, we'll announce right through what will be trained for what level and so on. We have also reserved space for political parties, probably on the last day or whatever, for their own councillors, that if they have anything that they want to prepare them, we will structure the program such that we create that space for them to look at that. On the levies, the structure of the levies is such that there is a targeted percentage that we get from local municipalities and a certain percentage from districts and metros. Metros, at the moment, we charge them a flat rate. A flat rate, it has been around 6 million and it has grown inflationary over the last 2 years. Before, it used to be a flat rate. On the district, we used to charge them 0.05 of their wage component of the bill and 0.04 for the locals. Those amounts are significantly far lower than even benchmarking with the 1% skills levy. The 1% skills levy that is collected by CITES, in our case local government CITA, takes into account 1% of the overall budget of the municipality, not 1% of the wage bill. But as we look at these issues, we look at the sensitivity analysis, the degree to which the municipality, we can stretch it to pay certain levies. And one of the areas that maybe in the detailed discussion, Chairperson, that we have agreed on, we will also expose the committee in terms of the difficulties of relying on the levy that is targeting a wage, because we're also the employer in the sector. So whatever you agree on the sector there, you are likely to be accused of having a direct interest on the agreed rate of increase for employees, because that will be your basis to determine what must come to you. So it puts us in a very compromising position from a legitimate engagement point of view. So that's the current targeting that we have at the moment. On the issue of outcomes of audits, every year we run what we call budget weeks. So the outcome of AGs for each year, we roll down a program in each province to run budget weeks for about 2 weeks in each province, targeting key issues that are substantive in the finding for each municipality. And then in those processes, we bring on board municipalities that have done relatively well in the same geographic space to share with others, but also outline to them what AG's focus will be doing in the next financial year. And so we've been running those, but we will be looking at other measures that would continue to impact on the improvement of levies. So my colleagues here, I can respond, Johan or Lance, on any other matter. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, thank you. Just from my side, just quickly on the audit opinions, whether that is part of the induction. There are three parts to this issue. The first is immediately after the council has been declared elected, the transitional arrangements are that municipal managers must ensure that councillors are up to date on what the state of play is within the municipality. So at that level, it is our recommendation that they deal with, among others, the audit opinion and what the administration plans to do about it. So that is at the municipality level. Then at the broader level, when it comes to training, we've indicated that there is dedicated training that has been procured through the National Treasury, where especially finance counselors, in other words, counselors that will be dealing with finances, would be targeted for that very particular training. And then at a much broader level, when it comes to counselor induction, all of the counselors would be inducted in terms of financial management issues, that there is such thing as an audit general, that there is such thing as an audit opinion, and what would be required in general of municipalities or of counselors then in that regard. Then the issue of the and I know it was directed at the DG on KZN, but it is so that the Organized Local Government Act still provides for the recognition of provincial bodies representing local government in their province. That is one aspect that we also wanted to come to the committee with in terms of the review of the Organized Local Government Act. So it's in terms of the provincial recognition that Kwanaloga is what recognized in KZN. Thank you, Chair. I think that is what I could identify.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond to three areas, I think all of which are quite related. If I could start with the district learning network, I think Councillor Johnson has articulated some of that background particularly well. He has been one of the key champions of the district learning network, both in the past and in the effort to resuscitate that. If I can just perhaps indicate where it's at.
It's a very good word.
It was a deliberate move. I'll tell you why. In 2008. I think COPTA and SALGA met, and there was a decision made to review what was referred to as a knowledge sharing program,
which itself had been going on for a while, I think since 2004. Obviously, at the time of the review, a couple of activities subsided. The activities of the District Learning Network was one of those that were held back for a while. That review, incidentally, was facilitated jointly by SAUGA and COPTA, with some initial funding from our German counterparts, which was then GTZ, now GIZ. They have then continued to fund SAUGA's part in trying to internalize that. Part of that internalization is to see what role it can play in some of the recommendations that came out of that joint review that we did together with COPTA. That review, or the District Learning Network, is in fact one of a couple of learning networks that have been proposed, the other being, for example, the continuation and consolidation of the South African Cities Network. There's other theme-based networks that have been proposed that we have already facilitated in our business plan, or factored into our business plan currently. I think the proposal to build the research capacity, or at least making inputs and guiding research that SAUGA does, as well as its other partners, including COPTA, is a very welcome proposal.
No, don't qualify my recommendation. That's your view. My recommendation is that you must blend it. You are now qualifying the saying what you provide input into what SAUGA does. That's not my view. My recommendation is very explicit. That you, municipalities at district level, must build research capacity. So that even the state of Africa draws its information. When they build capacity, it must be the view that they are building that for their people. So, I don't know. And the reason is exactly the good reason you are giving for using past counselors as tutors at local government. You see, that the nature and quality of information that will be built, and the people you are going to recruit to do that, is a crucial step in turning around your relationship as SAUGA generally with government as a whole, with the other two spheres. Anyway, I was just pointing out that I noticed your choice of words, and I disagree with them, and I'll tell you in advance that you are changing my recommendation. But it's up to you. I'm not saying it's a good idea if you think that.
The recommendation is noted.
Like it was noted.
And will be factored into our plan. In fact, I won't go into the details of the other activities of the District Learning Network. There's quite a long list of activities which include benchmarking, peer reviews, peer learning events, twinning between similar municipalities. Councillor Johnson has already alluded to some of those examples. There is a terms of reference that has been developed. And just in March, there was an event of district municipalities, mainly practitioners, reflecting on a couple of activities that can be undertaken there. The primary focus at that point was benchmarking and peer review, and that is a program that is likely to unfold in the coming year as well. So that is about the District Learning Network. The other comment that was made was regarding research and data. I think it is very related to the other point that was made. But I have to say, one of the things that as local government generally, and as SAUGA in particular, we are not very good in acknowledging progress and blowing our own horn, for example. In the past year, alone, 2010-11, there is no less than 20 research projects that have been facilitated at SAUGA alone. Obviously, then there is a couple of others that we've collaborated with other partners on. Some of them, in fact, have been alluded to in the presentation that was made today. We just highlighted a few. For example, the migration study. We highlighted that as an example, if anything, because it was also presented here in this very committee in October 2009, and we thought it would be prudent to just provide feedback on the progress that has been made, now culminating in developing a position paper on how SAUGA views the role of municipalities in facilitating the management of migration, social cohesion, etc.
that itself being indicative of the direction we're taking at SALGA, that a number of position papers, policy positions that we take must be informed by a well-researched, evidence-based, and that migration paper is just one example. The disaster guidelines is an example of a culmination of a tool in the form of a guide that was backed by some extensive research. There's a couple of others that I won't necessarily go into, state of ICT, etc. One other comment that was made there was relating to what has not happened. I'm not so sure how to respond to that, but I'll respond to it in the context of planning. How we have facilitated our planning is such that we include KPIs and targets for the current year, and we try to bite what we can be able to achieve. So the fact that we had a clean audit previously, and hopefully we'll get another one now, means that what we did try to bite, we are likely to achieve. So there isn't many that we haven't necessarily achieved. Yes.
Chair, I just want to say what the CEO has alluded to is, in fact, our cash flow issue. It does mean that we have to continuously adjust based on programs that we need to execute to adjust it to the funding that is available. And that is singularly one of the biggest governance challenges that we have at NEC, to give effect and to the performance indicators, which means that we have to adjust based on those. I think that what's important is that in order for us to execute a performance plan, the budget must be cash-backed, and that is not at this point in time we can give the assurance to the portfolio committee that we are able to deliver on all of the objectives set in the business plan that is subject to review.
Thank you very much. You see, the consequences of not communicating appropriately and in a timely manner is that then there isn't any evidence to talk about your evidence-based policy and decision-making. No evidence to contest the view that others are expressing about SALGA. Okay, let me put it differently. For the district to go, they must be abolished. It looks like you cooperated with that view. Did you? That district must be abolished. In other words, for example, this research, that's many research where you've done, the learning networks in the districts and so on. So that was not convincing to those who are pushing for district to be abolished. You are saying that to me. They knew that. Do you think they knew that? Johnson Ekfazu.
Our view is we have legislative functions. We have felt fires, both infrastructure, municipal health disasters, water, and so on. Arguments of, are those arguments convincing or not? We have to perform those functions. We have to build the plane while we're flying it. And that is...
You're not answering my question.
That means that those opinions and... etc., we have to continue with what we have to do. So whether we have considered it, we've contained it in the review of the IDP to say we are a planning authority.
You're not answering the question at all. You're incapable of answering the question because you're personally and directly involved in the district. I'm asking you a question about your management of knowledge. Right? This is what I'm asking. That you've done, you like a fish, you've produced a lot of eggs, but nobody knows about that, except bits and pieces you use to substantiate a little point there, a little point there. But the compound of the work you're doing,
And the question I'm asking, do you realize the consequences of not communicating it? Can you make that assessment? He is not seeing the consequences. He thinks it's obvious. It's obvious. Yeah. This is what you see, her reaction is exactly my reaction to you as well. You know, you're not hearing what we are saying the risk you're running is. You have already run anyway. George, you wanted to say something different?
Maybe a small contribution, Chair. On this matter, indeed, we have not been a fish on this one. There was a number of processes that were laid down and were government-led, in particular by COGTA, its predecessor, TPLG, the review of the white paper on local government and the review of provinces. So SALGA made a detailed submission, stated its position on districts, and we made clear telling comments, which have been accepted broadly, that we need to look at districts differently and locals differently, to look at creation of categories within the categories, your C1, your C2, C3, within B's where there's B1 or B2, exactly what my colleague Elroy was talking about, a different model of looking at how best we can drive targeting for municipalities, but creating a nuanced understanding how C's must be targeted and so on. So it's available and we submitted formally. Also last year, in some political processes that took place at a major scale, we have also made a detailed submission during the review of local government summit in December last year, and another meeting that took place in Durban, a big meeting. We also made political submissions to those processes. And we think that our positions have been widely canvassed.
I suspect I was on the periphery of those meetings. and the irony of it, the people I hear who were there in those meetings, the language they use, that evidence does not exist. In other words, in their opinion, you haven't said anything, but I mean, they don't see this story. Okay. Provide information to members. There's a document I know that I was in. I got it because I was in that meeting talking there. I got it as part of the package that was given to all the delegates. Was not given to me. I'm doing this assertion to you, Councillor Johnson, and Amos Masondo and George, in your absence. One of the reasons why we complain to you is that you're not communicating to us. You do not think we are stakeholders. He is stakeholder, you, as your ally. That in the manner in which you communicate to us, we pick it up through the vibe, and we bring it to the meetings and so on. And it's a weak way to manage your lobbying responsibility, if I may evaluate your lobbying story. It's a very weak one. You've never thought the committee is worth inviting to come and speak to your members for the last 5 years. Never. And it's not just your body language. It's practically what you're doing, your assessment of what is in the place. And this is not about glitches. It's about you and your attitude towards the committee and the question of information. We spoke to the department as well that hey, we don't want to hear about this thing being launched there and never heard about it. It's not being presented to us. We see interesting propaganda when you go to meetings and see this is from the department. So the management of information is a critical part of your lobbying responsibility for your own interest and your ability to make impact and so on. We were saying to some in the interaction about the municipal system bill that SALGA decided to because it has like you specifically came every day to the meeting to see that thing. Because there were very interesting things you wanted to see that it happened a different way towards the committee and the work it is doing. So I'm just being critical of your management of your information. It's not a publication and
the honorable member there is very polite when he says to you, what are you inviting? You hold this thing, you know there are members who will be. And I don't see why she also says, it's not just about women, it's about the committee and the work you're doing and the impact potentially can be made there. Okay. Yeah, okay.
No, we take the
advice. No, it was not meant as advice, it was meant as a reaction to the propaganda about any network. this is where it comes to. No, it's really the deep request, because what we would like you to report to us, firstly, you must give us information about what the learning network has done, what it intends to do, what it has done today, at least in the past year, if there's any work that was done in the past year. Communicate that to us. Sorry? Yeah, is that? And just give us a listing, and if you can, just your research work that you say you've done, that we can draw just where we can draw from and so on. Your website. How's your website? How do you look at your website?
We have revamped the chair. I'm sure from January I haven't seen it until March. Tomorrow we are launching a revamped website. So maybe we'll invite you by Friday to have a look at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not this Friday, but any other Friday they say.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know why. Let you provide us with just a listing of the research we have done as well. There was a presidency initiative around 14 districts, which I assume was done with SALGA's collaboration. What is the result of that?
What was the...
14 districts were identified by the presidency to explore what is now emerging. I don't know whether it has work intended to move towards the planning commission and the work that it is doing. Just for the
Can I help you, Chair?
Yeah.
It was a pilot study assessing the alignment between the national spatial development perspectives,
yes,
provincial growth development strategies, and IDPs.
Yeah. Where is it? You know.
I think I also haven't seen that report, but I think we must get it and make it available, Chair.
Part of my comment and saying SALGA presents its report, and it's not the first time I say this, I see it handled this way, the continuity stuff and so on. And that work is very interesting. One of the reasons why we're saying that the concern we have about the incoming councils, that people are going to stop things that have been happening that were not happening under their watch, but which had a very good basis to happen, which was very potentially useful stuff to happen. How do we ensure that there's a smooth transition, okay, from one administration to the other, so that change must take place where it has to take place? It will have taken place in the warm bodies, but in terms of substance of what gets done, how do we manage it such that the basis on which people suspended their interest was only understanding that government is doing something about them, and this was announced as one of those initiatives to develop lessons in practice with municipalities, and then from there work would be done. So if you suspend, often it happens without communicating with the people who are affected by the consequences of it, non-usage subsequently, and so it takes resources. So I'm just saying that this is
an important area of the transition that we must be mindful of, and SALGA in particular would know this better than us, that the delay in the continuation of the expenditure may be affected by this, for example, suspension of programs and projects that were approved, that were going on, for whatever reason. Some of them might be justified, some of them may not completely be justified. So this is why it strikes me now, is talking about district and what emerged by way of lessons. So that report would be interesting to look at and see what it actually tells us about district, about government working across the three spheres. in an integrated manner, and so on. So that would be the sort of stuff that we would appreciate to get feedback on, and so on. I'm afraid I have to bring this stuff to a close. We are way behind lunch and extended public committees, so we can't proceed. I'll give you 30 seconds each, Councillor Johnson and George, CEO.
Thank you, Chair. I think on your last question, once an IDP has been adopted and a budget approved and performance targets have been set, an incoming municipality cannot change that unless they undertake a fully fledged public participation process. So that means that there should be very clear monitoring on the issue of continuity that you said need to be monitored and oversight be conducted. But in conclusion, I want to thank the committee for allowing us to address it.
Okay. You know what I said to someone who comes from your organization, Sauda? I said I'm very excited by his optimism about people complying with the law, including that one. I'm really happy that at least there's one or two of you who are very optimistic. George?
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll only reinforce the appreciation that Councillor Johnson has raised, and also your objective criticism of our need to come close to the committee on strengthening our interface. We will certainly dig deeper and improve on that. I think we might have only extended to the level of inviting committee to our major events, but we would look at a really practical way of improving on that, Chairperson, and we really appreciate the interaction, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We said that looking at the resource allocations, the Auditor General expresses his view that you've done your work well in that area, but the municipalities themselves need to learn from that. It's doable, your members, in other words. And it must be reflected in their compliance with the law, with the performance requirement for services. And so you have a critical role to play there to represent the weaker of your members who are having to deal with huge poverty problems. They themselves are not able to do what they are doing because poverty expresses itself, amongst others, in the absence of capacity, people capacity, in Torando's municipalities as well. So creative ideas about how we deal with that in the medium to long term is a critical part to which you must contribute. So thank you very much. Like all of the presentations we have received today, there are issues that may arise between now and when we finalize our interaction with yourself for purposes of the budget process. We may come to you for more information, and those things that you know you haven't given us, you haven't spoken to us about, those that we didn't raise here, but you know we know about, let us know. And those that we ask, please let us have them. Thank you very much, members. You are required to be in the extended public committees now, so please be there. Please do that. Yes.
Thank you.